27. It was Jude who found his voice first, weak as it was. I watched his hand fly up, pressing the compass against his chest.
What are you talking about?
I drew the barrel of the gun closer to Clancy's face. Answer him. In that moment, it became just as clear to me as it was to Clancy that he never had been in a situation like this before, one he couldn't wriggle out of, let alone control. Reluctance and frustration burned an ugly expression on his face.
I have a source in the League who says that they're going forward with their plans to blow those kids to hell. You kill me, and you have no idea about when or how it happens.
I shook my head, but inwardly my stomach clenched. Who's the source? You could have pulled those plans off a computer network for all we know. The smirk on his face was enough to make me want to pull the trigger. He drew the name out, twisting the vowels.
Our mutual acquaintance, Nico.
No! Jude cried. No, Rue, he's lying!
Nico and I go way back, Clancy interrupted, glancing over to where Liam was struggling back onto his feet, coughing.
Do you ever tell the truth? I asked. You would never have had access to Nico. He was in Lita's testing program until the League got him out, and he hasn't left HQ since.
Clancy looked at me like he couldn't quite believe I hadn't put it all together by now. Ruby, think. Where was he before that? Or do you all honestly not know?
I know I'm going to shred the skin off your face and turn it into hair ribbons,
Vida snarled from the floor, still visibly struggling to get her legs under her. She sneered at him, pulling her fury around her like armor.
That's the spirit, Chubbs murmured, waiting for her to finally accept his help up, which, of course, she did not.
What? Jude was saying, coming up behind me. What's he talking about?
I felt sick, faint enough that I almost sat down again.
Nico was in Thurmond? While you were there. And she gets it. Finally.
Clancy gave me a little round of applause.
We were scalpel buddies. They liked to compare our brains, to study kids at the opposite ends of the color spectrum. They even brought us in on the same day, way back when.
My mind was racing, trying to figure out how I couldn't have known that until now, if Nico had ever offered up a hint of it. But I couldn't remember if I had ever told him I was in Thurmond. Had Kate?
Are you saying your old man had them experiment on you?
Liam's voice was rough as he came to stand behind me. Clancy tapped his fingers against the table. He had no proof. His father had consented only if the researchers didn't leave scars.
After I walked out of that camp, I did wonder what happened to the others. I figured that they must have moved the experimentations to another location once they started expanding the camp to bring in kids like our friend Ruby. It took me some time to find they'd been brought to Lita Corp's Philadelphia lab.
My stomach turned over. I tried to say something, anything, but the picture of Nico, small, scared Nico, strapped down to one of the infirmary's beds, was too much for my mind to take. I couldn't process anything else.
Even before East River, Clancy said, folding his hands on the table in front of him, I realized the only kids who would ever truly understand what I was trying to do were those who had been there with me. I thought they could be useful, but by the time I traced them to Lita Corp, Nicholas was the only survivor whose brain hadn't been completely destroyed.
And all you had to do was wait until the League broke him out to make him useful? I said, disgusted. Were you planning on convincing him to break away and meet you at East River before that plan imploded?
I didn't wait for anyone. Who do you think slipped the intel to the League about what they were doing in that lab? Who do you think suggested a way for them to get the kids out? I had to be patient, of course, and wait until they had him back in California before contacting him. And no, it was never the plan to bring him to East River, Ruby. He was more useful to me there, collecting every piece of intel about the league I asked for.
No,
Jude said, dragging his hands back through his hair.
No, he wouldn't.
You've all misjudged him, underestimated him. No one has ever suspected him, no matter how much digging I had him do. Clancy's eyes were on the gun as he continued. He's the one who told me that the League is moving forward with strapping the bombs to those kids. That's why he hacked the Chatterlink for me, so we could meet, so I could do him this favor.
He told you about the flash drive, I said. That's really why you're here, right?
His eyebrows rose, lips parting just that tiny bit. The eager glint was back in his eyes.
Flash drive? And what would be on this flash drive? Something I'd like?
You... The word choked off. Clancy was looking at us all, like he was trying to pick which mind to invade, which one would give him easiest access to the truth. I forced his attention back to me with the gun.
He said you were looking for Stuart because he was in danger. My role was only to get you here, to tell you about what happened. But there's something else involved?
Talk, I said. Tell me everything, and maybe, maybe you live. Clancy sighed, his reluctance deflating his excitement about the potential gold he'd stumbled across.
2 days ago, several agents revolted, killing Albin and seizing control of the organization. Everyone who stood against them was either locked up or killed.
He glanced at Liam, a smile tucked in the corner of his lips. Cole, Kate, all of the instructors, even Albin's weathered face, his yellowing smile, flashed through my mind. Once the initial shock wore off, Liam began shaking. I put my hand on his arm to steady him. But it was Vida I should have been worried about. She threw her fist in the direction of Clancy's smug face. Chubbs barely caught her around the waist, and the strength it took to wheel her back around sent them both crumpling to the floor. She was howling, actually howling, as she struggled and kicked him, trying to untangle herself from his wiry arms. Liam had met the news about his brother with shock, and Vida had been swallowed up by her own fiery anger. But Jude, he was crumbling into the kind of deep grief that was marked only by silent tears.
What's their plan? I demanded. The specifics.
They're moving them out of L.A. by 6 tomorrow morning.
Shock sent me back a step, and the space between us flooded with a palpable terror. I felt it licking at my skin, leaving behind a sheen of icy perspiration. So soon. I tried to calculate the drive in my mind, find the extra hours in the day we'd need to make it there in time.
The other kids have no idea what's going on, according to Nico. It seems that your beloved Kate was only able to warn him before they took her, too.
And somehow that was the worst part, the hardest thing to hear.
Took her where? Vida demanded. Tell me, you goddamn bastard, or I'll rip your...
Why 6 tomorrow? Chubbs asked, still struggling to pin Vida's arms.
Because it's Christmas Day, Clancy said, like it was the most obvious thing in the world.
The pathetic attempt my father is launching at a peace summit? Why wouldn't they want to steal some of that spotlight? Undermine everything the Federal Coalition might be forced to agree to?
No.
No, 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 I begged, like that could somehow change the situation. Like that tiny prayer could destroy the dread crawling through every part of me.
Good luck getting back, Clancy said, malice dripping from every word.
Do you know how long it took me to find a plane and a source of gas to get out here?
Days. Almost a full week of looking, and then another day to find a pilot. Even if you could drive the distance in 6 hours... You'd still have to make it through the blockades my father and the Federal Coalition set up on each side of the California border without getting picked up. That's going to go down smoothly, huh? Knowing that you could have saved those kids if only you'd had just a few more hours. I was so sure my hatred of Clancy had a natural end and that I'd hit it one day, a point I could reach not when I forgave him, but when I accepted what had happened and moved on. But it didn't work that way. I saw it now. The feeling was like smoke, changing its scent and shape with the months and years that passed. I would never be rid of it. It would only grow and grow and grow until one day it finally smothered me. I didn't give the others the chance to give their opinions. I didn't want any of them to talk me out of it, not when there were 20 other kids in California about to be sent off to their deaths, and we had no time. No time. My eyes slid over to Jude, slumped against the wall, his fingers gripping the compass. His face such a perfect portrait of grief, I had to fight to keep from mirroring it. Instead, I let the anger flood through me again. I whipped the gun across Clancy's face and caught him by the collar of the shirt. This is the only way, I told myself as I hauled him onto his feet. His nose was bleeding, and he looked like he couldn't quite believe it. Let's go, I hissed. You're buying us the hours we need. Is someone going to notice this is missing? I glanced back at Chubbs as we scaled the stairs into the small charter jet. Probably. A part of me had wanted to laugh, really, truly laugh, when Clancy had finally admitted there was an airport in the city and that it was how he had come in to meet us. From the look of it, the airport had been converted to cater exclusively to private planes, though there was a single large cargo plane taxiing out onto one of the runways. I'd felt a small jolt of panic at the sight, thinking our ride was about to take off without us. But no, of course not. Why would Clancy travel like a commoner when he could manipulate and compel anyone into giving him anything? The jet was ridiculously beautiful. At the sight of the plush carpet and enormous beige leather seats, I did sigh, just that little bit. Each side of the private jet was lined with bright oval windows and warm, cozy lights. The paneling along the back wall and sides of the aircraft was that glossy, expensive-looking faux wood. From what I could see, there was a fully stocked drink station between the two bathrooms in the back, past the 8 enormous, plush leather seats. "Who'd you steal this from?" I asked as I shoved Clancy inside, my gun digging into the small of his back. "Does it matter?" Clancy grunted, dropping into the nearest seat. He held up his bound hands, nodding to the plastic zip tie Chubbs had been oh so happy to supply. "Can you cut this off now?" "Is he okay to fly?" I asked, jerking my thumb in the pilot's direction. Most people could barely remember their own name when I was in their heads, let alone operate delicate machinery. Clancy folded his arms over his chest. "Every time he looks at us, he sees 6 adults on a business trip, all of whom have paid him handsomely for his services in arranging the flight details. You're welcome." Liam caught my eye as he followed the others in. "When do we get to dump him?" It was the first time he'd spoken to me since we'd left the restaurant. I hadn't even been able to look him in the eye before now, afraid of the disappointment I knew would be there. Liam would have fought me on this if I had let him, just like I would have fought for him and Chubbs to stay in Colorado, far away from the upcoming fight. But I think we both knew they were losing battles. "Mid-flight?" Chubbs asked, his voice brimming with hope. "Over a desert?" Vida slid into the seat to the right of mine before Liam could. "We are not dumping him yet, are we, Boo?" She knew exactly what I was thinking. This was what the League had taught us to do when we located a valuable asset. You brought him in, bled him for intel, and then traded him for something better. I shook my head, trying not to smile at the alarm that flashed in his dark eyes. "No, we're not." The look he gave me in return made my skin feel tight around my bones. But what could he do? Nothing that I couldn't do right back to him 5 times over. I could tell Chubbs wanted to ask exactly what we meant by that, but the pilot's voice interrupted, telling us he had finished his final checks and was ready for takeoff. I didn't relax my grip on the gun until we were up in the air, sailing high above the jagged peaks of the Rockies. For all the grumbling he'd done about how much more likely it was for this kind of jet to crash than a normal passenger plane, Chubbs passed out in his seat 5 minutes after the plane was in the air. I glanced over my shoulder, watching as he began to slowly drift too far to the right, only to startle awake for an instant and catch himself. The others had laid their seats out flat or curled up on them, using the blankets we'd found in one of the storage compartments. Clancy unbuckled his seatbelt, pushing onto his feet. "Going somewhere?" I asked. "To use the bathroom in the back," he snapped. "Why? Do you need to come in and watch?" "No, but I followed him to the back regardless, shooting him a meaningful look as he slammed the door and locked it." I leaned back against the shelves of drinks and serviceware in the back. My eyes drifted from Liam to Vida to Chubbs, and then, finally, to Jude, sitting nearby. He'd been so quiet up until then, I'd just assumed he'd fallen asleep like the others. "Hi," I whispered. He had been staring out the window to the unending stretch of land below, and he stayed that way, even when I touched his shoulder. Jude, who hated silence, whose past slithered up to him like a shadow along glass, did not say a single word. I sat down on his chair's armrest, glancing across the way to make sure both Liam and Chubbs were still asleep. I had known worried Jude and terrified Jude and ecstatic Jude, but never this shade of him. "Talk to me," I said. Jude burst into tears. "Hey," I said, taking his shoulder. "I know it doesn't feel this way, but it'll be okay." It took several minutes of coaxing for him to settle down and sit up. His skin went blotchy and his nose refused to stop running. He swiped it against the arm of his jacket. "I should have been there. With them. I could have helped them somehow. Kate and Albin. They needed me and I wasn't there." "And thank God for that," I said. "Otherwise you'd be trapped there with all of the others." "Or dead." It was too horrible to even consider. I put an arm around him, and whatever invisible string had been holding him up promptly snapped. He leaned into my shoulder, still crying. "Oh my God," he muttered. "This is so not cool. It's just, I'm really scared Kate's dead too. All of them. It's like Blake all over again, and I'm just as responsible. Would any of this have even happened if I hadn't been so stupid? If Rob and Jarvin hadn't caught us listening that day?" I blew out the breath I didn't realize I had been holding and rubbed his arm. "None of this is your fault," I told him. "None of it. You aren't responsible for what other people do, good or bad. Everyone is just making the choices they think will help them get by." He nodded, swiping at his eyes with the back of his hand. For a long while, the only sound between us was the moaning of engines and Chubbs's rhythmic snores. "But I could have made a difference," Jude whispered. "I could have fought. I..." "No," I interrupted. "I'm sorry. I get where you're coming from, and they're all good thoughts, but I just don't think it's worth it. It's not worth it to weigh what you could have done or should have done when there's no way of changing it. And it's not worth risking your life over. Nothing is more important or valuable than your life. Got it?" He nodded, but was quiet again. A little more settled, I thought, than before. "It's just not fair," Jude said. "None of this is fair." "Life isn't fair," I said. "It's taken me a while to get that. It's always going to disappoint you in some way or another. You'll make plans, and it'll push you in another direction. You will love people, and they'll be taken away no matter how hard you fight to keep them. You'll try for something and won't get it. You don't have to find meaning in it. You don't have to try to change things. You just have to accept the things that are out of your hands and try to take care of yourself. That's your job." He nodded. I waited until he had taken a deep breath and seemed a little more composed before I stood and ruffled his unruly hair. I was sure he'd groan or bat my hand away. Instead, he caught it with his own.
"Ruby?"
His face was drawn, not sad exactly, just tired, I thought.
"If you can't change anything, then what's the point of it?"
I wrapped my fingers around his and gave his hand a steady squeeze. "I don't know, but when I figure that out, you'll be the first to know." 28. I never thought I'd be so happy to see California's uneven, fractured mess of a freeway system as we headed toward the glowing high-rises of downtown Los Angeles. The ride was bumpy as all get-out, and the familiar stench of gasoline was working its magic through the car vents, smothering even the unnerving new car smell clinging to the leather seats. It didn't matter much to any of us, though. There had been a large black SUV waiting for us on the runway when we disembarked at LAX. I cut Clancy's hands free so he could take the car key offered by a man in a dress suit and black sunglasses, but he was back at the wrong end of my gun before he could think of trying to get away. After it just being the five of us for so long, I felt Jude flinch at the look the man passed over him. "We need to talk about a plan," I said once we were in the car, miles away from the airport. It was just past 7 in the evening. If things had been normal at HQ, the first of 2 night classes would just be starting. Then it would be 2 hours to mandatory lights out, and another hour before the agents had to retreat to their quarters. It would be safer and easier to try to round up the kids from a single location, the sleeping rooms on the second level, but there were cameras in every corner. Not to mention, success depended on 3 very big ifs. If we got that far, if we found the entrance, if we didn't get caught sneaking in. "And that's only if they are running the usual schedule," I added. "Did Nico say anything about it?" "Hey!" I gripped the already torn collar of Clancy's shirt. "I'm asking you a question." Clancy grit his teeth. "He hasn't responded to my last few messages. I'm assuming they took the chatters away to keep rumors from spreading."
"They'd be running the usual schedule," Vida said with certainty from the driver's seat. "They wouldn't want any of the kids to know that Albin was out. That'd cause a massive amount of panic, right? They wouldn't tell any of them the actual objective."
"How are they going to rig the explosives without the kids figuring it out?" Liam asked. "It seems like a vest of the stuff would be a pretty big clue."
"That's the easy part," Clancy said. "You break them up into small groups of 2 or 3, sew the explosives into the lining of a coat, and set it up with a remote detonator. All you have to do is wait to give the kids the jackets until the very end."
He said it casually, without a hint of disgust, like some part of him actually admired the plan. "That means prep time at HQ will be minimal. If they're moving the kids out at 6 or so, wake up will be at 5. I shifted to look at Vida in the driver's seat. "Does it make more sense to go in at 3 or 4?
4. She said.
4? Clancy repeated, like it was the stupidest thing he'd ever heard.
"Sure, if you want to give yourself a better chance of being caught."
"Mandatory rolling blackouts," I explained to the others, ignoring him. "California has been trying to conserve energy that way. They happen every night in our area between 3 and 5. The security system and cameras are the only things hooked up to the backup generator. But it'll at least be dark in the hallways as we're moving through them."
"Once we're in, I can go take care of the agents in the monitor room," Vida said. "We won't even have to shut the system off. How long do you think it'll take to get in and out through this entrance of yours?"
"I don't know. I've never walked it. I've only seen them bring people in and out."
"Where does it lead?" Jude asked. "And how come I don't know about it?"
I looked down at my hands, trying to keep my voice light.
"It's where they brought traitors and key assets for questioning, and then took them out." "Holy shit! They did have you torture people," Vida said, looking both intrigued and impressed.
So did Clancy.
Where is it?
I didn't torture them, I protested weakly. Just questioned them. Aggressively. Liam kept his gaze focused on something outside of his window, but I felt him tense to the point of snapping beside me.
It's the locked door on the third level, isn't it? Jude asked. The one just past the computer room?
Alban told me once it leads out to an entrance near the 7th Street Bridge over the Los Angeles River, I said. If they're holding any of the agents or hiding the evidence of what they've done, it'll be in that room.
Okay, well, bypassing the fact that the League has a secret torture dungeon, Liam said, are we sure they won't have blocked the path in and out?
Why do you all keep saying we? Clancy asked. I hope you don't think I'm coming down in that shithole with you.
Too bad for you. You're the only one who doesn't get a choice about it, I said. You want to see what's happening at the League? You want to chat with your friend Nico again? You got it. Front row seat.
He must have suspected it would come to this all along, but he didn't look afraid. Maybe after everything, he still wasn't convinced that I was willing to serve him up on a platter to the League to let them do with him what they would. Maybe he already knew that I would trade him to Jarvin and the others if it meant getting the other kids away. If there was so much as a crack in this plan, he'd find a way to slip through it. Which meant I would have to watch him that much closer, staying three steps ahead of him instead of just one.
What does happen if we can't get them out undetected? Chubbs asked.
Then they're going to have to do what they were trained to, I said, and fight back.
The Los Angeles River was a 48-mile stretch of concrete that had always served as more of a punchline than an actual river. At one point in its long life, it probably had been a real waterway, but humanity had swept in and constrained its flow to a single concrete channel that wound its way around the outskirts of the city, lined on either side by railroad tracks. Kate had pointed it out once when we'd left on an op, telling me that they used to film car chases down there for movies that I'd never heard of. Now, though, if you were to walk its length, which was usually as parched as the ground had been in Pueblo, you'd be hard-pressed to find anything other than the electric colors of graffiti tags and wandering homeless folks trying to find a place to settle for the night. If it did happen to rain, which was rare in Southern California, all sorts of things washed out of the storm drains and into the open river. Shopping carts, trash bags, deflated basketballs, stuffed animals, the occasional dead body.
I'm not seeing anything, Chubbs muttered, holding the flashlight higher so I could scan the bridge's support pillars again. Are you sure?
Here!
Vida called over to us from across the channel. Liam waved his flashlight once so we'd see them. The streetlights were off, and without the light pollution that usually came from the city, we were both struggling to see anything beyond a few feet in front of us and to not be spotted by anyone else. I took Liam's arm and guided him down the slope of the embankment, then up again to the other side, to the place where the arch of the bridge's underbelly met the ground. I kept my flashlight aimed at Clancy's back, making sure he walked the entire way in front of me. Jude, I thought, counting them off with my eyes. Liam, Vida, Chubbs.
I think this is it.
Vida stepped back, keeping her own flashlight aimed at the huge, swirling patterns of graffiti. There was a blue star at the center of it, but it was the way the paint looked that gave the hidden door away. It was thicker here, to the point that it looked sticky to the touch. I felt for a disguised handle before throwing my shoulder against it. The panel of cement swung inward, scraping the loose rubble on the other side. Vida, Liam, and I leaned in, shining our flashlights down the metal staircase. I reached over and hauled Clancy to the front.
You first.
If it were possible, this tunnel was somehow even cruder than the tunnel we usually took in and out of HQ. It was also about 10 times longer and filthier. Clancy stumbled in front of me, barely catching himself with a quiet curse. The walls, which had started out wide enough for us to walk three across, narrowed until we were forced into a single-file line. Liam was at my back, the damp, rancid air wheezing in and out of his lungs in a way that was starting to worry me. I slowed a step, letting him catch up and nudge me forward again.
"I'm okay," he promised. "Keep going."
In the distant dark, I could hear the rush of some kind of water, though the sludge we were shuffling through had clearly been there long enough to start to rot and solidify. How many prisoners had they brought in this way, I wondered, and how many bodies had they hauled out? I tried not to shudder or turn my light down to see if the water was as red as my mind had made it out to be. I tried to stop myself from picturing the way Jarvan and the others would have dragged Albin out, Kate out, Cole out, their lifeless eyes open, gazing at the string of small flickering lights hanging overhead.
"After this, we're all bathing in bleach," Chubbs informed us, "and burning these clothes. I keep trying to figure out why it smells so much like sulfur, but I think I've decided to leave that one alone for now."
"That's probably for the best," Clancy said.
His face was bone white as he turned into my flashlight's beam, which made his already dark brows and eyes look like they'd been stained with soot.
"How many of these tunnels did the League make?"
"A few," I said. "Why? Planning your escape already?" He snorted.
"Time," I called back.
3:53, Vida answered. "Can you see the end?"
"No."
I felt the first cold drip of panic down my spine. No, I couldn't. We'd been walking for close to a half hour, and it felt like we hadn't covered any ground at all. It was the same cement walls, the same sloshing of our footsteps. Every once in a while, one of our flashlight beams would catch a rat as it scampered against the wall or darted into some black crack in the ground. The tunnel seemed to draw us into its darkness like a deep breath. The walls shrank around our heads and shoulders again, forcing me to bend at the waist. How much longer could it be? Another half hour? An hour? Were we really going to have less than that to find the kids and get them back out again?
"We're almost there," Liam whispered, taking my arm and aiming the flashlight toward the far end of the tunnel,
where the path began to slope upward, out of the sludge,
where there was a large metal door.
"Is that it?"
I nodded, relief and adrenaline pulsing through me as I whirled back toward the others.
"Okay," I called softly. "This is it. Vida, start the clock. 15 minutes in and out. Everyone remember what you're doing?"
Jude squeezed past us to get to the electronic lock that flashed on as he approached. I scanned the nearby ceiling and walls, looking for any sort of camera, only half surprised when I didn't find one. Interesting. Albin had either been dedicated to keeping the interrogation block a protected, classified secret from anyone other than senior staff and advisors, or he had been worried about the thought of someone getting visual evidence of the people he was trafficking in and out. Both, probably.
Good. One less thing to worry about.
I had just clicked the flashlight off when I felt a warm hand close around my arm. I turned right into Liam's waiting arms. The kiss was over before it ever really started. A bruising single touch filled with enough urgency, enough frustration and wanting to send my blood rushing. I was still trying to catch my breath when he pulled back, his hands on my face, his lips close enough to mine for me to feel him pant, too. Then he was stepping back, away, letting distance flood in between us again. His voice was low, rough.
"Give 'em hell, darling."
"And for the love of God, bitch, don't get stabbed this time," Vida added.
I would have smiled if I hadn't heard Clancy's faint laughter at my right. "Any sign of trouble from you is the only excuse I need to use this," I warned him, pressing the gun to the curve of his skull. "The only excuse I need to leave your body down here to be eaten by the rats."
"Got it," Clancy said in his low, velvety tones. "And if I'm good, do I get a kiss, too?"
I shoved Clancy forward, keeping a grip on the collar of his shirt.
"Okay, I'm ready," Jude said as he put his hand against the lock pad to fry it. "Lead on, leader."
The air down in the interrogation block was no fresher or cleaner than the tunnel had been. The familiar stench of human vomit and filth twisted my gut as I stepped through the doorway and down the short flight of stairs. I had my flashlight in one hand and the gun in my other, both aimed at the door on the other end of the hallway of metal doors with their observation windows. I swept the beam of pale light around the space and, finding it clear, signaled for the others to come through.
"Right behind you,"
Vida called, her heavy footsteps matching my pace. Somewhere behind us in the dark, the others were working their way down the doors, looking for prisoners. For Cole. At the door, I crouched, releasing my grip on Clancy's shirt and motioning for Jude to get behind me. Whether I actually drew it up from deep in my memory or found it naturally, my training with the League had me propping the door open, scanning the hall with my gun in front of me before I so much as thought about stepping through. My pulse pounded in my ears, jumping, jumping, jumping with my nerves as I stepped out into the hallway and pulled Jude after me. Vida split with us as we came around the hallway's curve and took the first set of stairs. One level, I thought. Fifth door on the right. She has the hard job here, not you. You have one level to go up. She has two to get to the surveillance room. One level, fifth door on the right. There was a loud clatter to my left. I skidded to a stop, Jude crashing into my back. My heart was in my throat when I turned back to where Clancy stood a short distance ahead, fading into the dim light. I jogged to catch up to him, waving him forward. We kept to the curve, heading around to the other staircase. Without the gentle hum of static in the computer room, it felt like the first I'd ever stepped foot in this place. Which was why, I guess, it was appropriate that the first unfriendly face we saw after we climbed the stairs and opened the door to the next level was one I didn't recognize at all. There were dozens of agents at the League's headquarters in Georgia, even more at the one in Kansas. I should have known Jarvan and the others would bring in every sympathetic soul they could to help take Alban out. I could smell the alcohol on him, the spice of whatever he had eaten for dinner that night. He must have been headed up to the agent quarters on the first level, but the sight of us was clearly enough to make him forget as much. His shaggy blonde hair fell into his eyes as he jumped at our sudden appearance. The lazy, stupid smile on his face dropped to a scowl.
"What the hell are you doing out of bed?" he demanded, reaching for me.
I was faster, whipping the butt of the gun across his face and yanking him back into the stairwell. Jude caught the door before it slammed shut, peeking out through a crack to watch the hall. Slipping into a drunk mind was like sliding a spoon through pudding. The only challenge was trying to find what I was looking for in the tangle of thoughts, all of which seemed to wash into one another.
"Rue," Jude whispered, "let's go."
If the man's memory was right, there were other agents on this floor, most of them in the infirmary, but one, for sure, stationed between the doors of the two sleeping rooms. I dragged the agent off to the side of the stairs, narrowly avoiding where Clancy stood silently waiting. I tucked the man into a corner and relieved him of the knife he was carrying in his back pocket. "Stay behind me," I told Jude, my eyes on the way Clancy seemed to be fading in and out of the shadows. The whole time. The power was still out, and the hallway was little more than a dark curtain we were trying to fight our way through. They used glow-in-the-dark tape along the edges of the floor and around the different door handles and lock pads, but the combined light was less than a fraction of what it would have been if I could have turned my flashlight on. I counted the door handles as we moved. 1, 2, 3. This is actually going to work. 4, 5. Please let this work. The agent posted outside of the sleeping rooms, Agent Clarkson, wasn't a stranger. She was tall, lanky, with dark features and a fondness for knife fighting that had gone uncontested for years. She'd been fighting so hard to be made a senior agent. Her confidence had warped into desperation, and then, from there, a frustration that she could only ever take out on the ones below her. Us. She was the opposite of Kate in so many ways that hadn't mattered before now.
"Andrea,"
I called softly. Andrea?
Shell? She said. It's already time. I thought wake-up was at 5.
There was a flutter of movement about 7 feet ahead on my left. I couldn't meet her eyes to trap her that way, but the moment I caught the whiff of detergent and the subtle shift of warm breath that stirred the air in front of me, I lashed an arm out, catching her across the chest. Her gun clattered loudly against the floor, but her body was soft and silent as I pushed the image of her sitting and sinking into a deep sleep. She slumped against me, and I eased her down onto the floor. Jude bolted past me, heading for the boys' door. I took the handle of the girls' door, the same I'd opened for months without a second thought, and stepped inside, pulling the door shut silently behind Clancy. I flicked on my flashlight. Up, I started to say, shining it into the nearest bunk. The room wasn't large. It only needed to house 12 girls, though there'd always been an extra bunk bed, crowding the right wall, on the off chance the league ever picked up another kid. The bunk Vida and I shared, in the back right corner, had been neatly made, the sheets stretched tightly over the mattress with Vida's military-like precision. All of them were almost like there was no one left to sleep here. Too late.
Don't say it, I warned Clancy. Not one damn word.
He stared ahead at the empty bunks, a cold expression on his face, but he stayed silent. My knees buckled slightly, mirroring the feeling of my heart as it dropped like a stone through my chest. Too late. Those girls. All of them. They were... I pressed the heels of my palms against my forehead, slamming them there over and over as a silent scream rippled up my throat. Oh my God! All of them? Too late! I ripped the door back open, letting Clancy slip out ahead of me as we moved to the boys' room. Jude wouldn't know, wouldn't think to be silent. He'd wake up the entire base. Where the girls' room had been cold and dark, this one was filled with the light of flashlight lanterns and the natural body heat of 20 kids, all awake, fully dressed, and crammed together on the bunk beds. My eyes flew around each of their faces before they settled on the small pile of weapons gathered at Jude's and Nico's feet in the center of the room.
No, 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 Nico cried. What are you doing here?
I told you, we came for you, Jude said. What the heck is going on?
I thought you knew about their plans, I said, about the bombs and camps. You didn't think we'd come to get you out after your friend told us what happened here? Clancy only had that same unreadable expression on his face as he surveyed the room.
Of course I knew!
Nico let out a low moan.
We've been communicating on the chatters this whole time. You were supposed to stay away. I told him to tell you not to come back until it was safe. Until tomorrow.
What the hell? I said, whirling toward Clancy. What game are you playing? The faces around me looked just as confused as I felt.
Who are you talking to? Jude asked, glancing around.
Him! I snapped, exasperated. I tried to grab Clancy before he slipped back out the door. Who else?
Rue? Jude began, his eyes wide. There's no one there.
Clancy is... Clancy? Nico said. He's here? He came? He's right here, I said, grabbing for his arm. My fingers passed right through it, drifting through cold air. The sight of him wavered, flickered, faded into nothing. He's... My mind was gripped with panic. I couldn't finish the thought.
I didn't see him get away, Jude said. Did Vida take him to disable the cameras?
Rue?
The cameras are already down. We hacked into the program hours ago, Nico said.
We have to stay here, one of the other kids added. They told us to get into one room and stay until it was all over. You're too early.
Until what's over? Jude was asking.
I barely heard him over the roar of blood in my ears.
What's happening at 6?
Nico let his head fall back for a second, taking a deep, frustrated breath.
That's when Kate and the others are coming to get us.
29. It was a trick. Okay, I said, trying to catch one of the thoughts flying through my head long enough to put it into words. Okay, we just... He was there. In the tunnel. He was there. He came in with us. If he was going to get away, why didn't he do it before? Clancy could influence more than one person. He could have tricked all of us by never getting off the plane in the first place. But he had. I had dragged him down the steps myself, felt his pulse jump when I pushed him toward the ladder down into the tunnel. Why not escape then? It had been just as dark outside.
What should we do?
Jude was asking.
Because he needed me to get him in here before Kate and the others came back. You have to stay here where it's safe, Nico rambled. If you go back out there...
I let him play me again.
Ruby? Rue!
Jude grabbed my shoulder, turning me back toward him, forcing me to break my gaze with a crack on the far wall. His hair and eyes were both wild, his freckles overlapping points on a map I'd only recently learned to read. He was anxious, but he wasn't afraid. This was a good Jude to have. Go down and get Chubbs and Liam and bring them up here, I said. But come back if you think even for a second that you might get caught. Understand? He nodded, eagerly. Vida will be here in a few minutes, I told the others, and probably in a holy terror of a mood when she realized I'd sent her up to disable the cameras for no reason. Once the four of them are back, move the bunks and barricade the doors. No one else comes in.
What about you?
Nico asked. I have to go take care of your friend, I said, hoping my voice was enough to convey how deep Nico's betrayal had buried us in this mess.
I should go with you, Nico whispered. He's here. Really?
I'd seen that look 100 times, 1,000, at East River. The wide-eyed adoration of someone who either had no idea there were scales under Clancy's skin, or someone unhinged enough to just not care. I thought of Olivia and the way she had all but clawed at her own throat when she said his name. I'd been nursing my anger toward Nico from the moment Clancy told us he'd been slipping him intel all this time, letting it grow into thoughts like, I'll never forgive him. But looking at him now, I forgot it in an instant. Heartache just tore it away, and what was left was the true realization of how damaged the kid in front of me was. His paranoia, his nervous fidgeting, his silent moods. Of course Clancy was his hero. He had saved him from a hell too terrible for nightmares. Did he ask you any questions about HQ recently? I asked. About particular files or people? By the way Nico's mouth seemed to twist, it was looking more and more likely that his loyalty to Clancy was going to win out over his alarm that Clancy had flat-out lied and brought us here, despite the warning he'd given him.
He gave me a list of words and people to look for, Nico said. There were a lot of them. One of them pinged in the system a few weeks ago, an agent called Professor.
I tensed. Professor? You're sure?
The agent was doing some kind of research at our Georgia base. It just suddenly popped up on the classified server a few weeks ago. I think he knew who it was because he wanted the base's location. What had the advisor said when he came into Albin's office all of those weeks back? Something about a situation in Georgia with Professor and a project called Snowfall. What about stuff here at HQ?
He asked about the different tunnels and the blackouts, Nico said slowly. What else? I pressed. I was aware of the ticking clock, even if he wasn't. What about the blackouts?
He wanted to know if they shut off things like the lock pads or retinal locks.
I turned on my heel, throwing Jude off me as I opened the door and bolted out into the hallway. Spots flashed in front of my eyes as they struggled to adjust again. I counted off the door handles as I ran. I kept to the outside curve, one eye always on the dark infirmary windows to my right. They'd drawn all the curtains. Not even the machine lights were bleeding through. In fact, the only light on the entire second level seemed to be the flashlight Clancy clenched between his teeth as he riffled through the filing cabinets inside of Albin's office. All of the lock pads and retinal locks were on the backup power generator, and normally they would have been enough to keep even Clancy out had they actually still been attached to the door. Someone had taken something, a crowbar, an axe, a small explosive, and blown them off that way. I slid forward, nudging the door open farther as I slid my gun out of the waistband of my jeans. Clancy made a small triumphant noise as he ripped a bulging red folder free from where it had been trapped among 100 others. He wasted no time flipping through the pages as he turned back around to Albin's desk. Someone had flipped it onto its side as he or she ransacked the place. He used one of its wide, flat legs to lay the folder out and free up his hand to hold the flashlight. The look on his face was so painfully eager, I felt a twinge of apprehension.
"Found what you were looking for?"
Clancy's head shot up at the same moment his hand slid the folder back, off the desk, into a metal trash can. For a moment, anger fought with exasperation on his face, but Clancy settled on a devastating smile as he stared down the barrel of the gun.
"I did, but don't you have more important things to worry about?"
His voice had taken on the quality of smoke.
"Other people more important than me?"
He inclined his head toward the other end of Albin's office, and even before I turned, the metallic scent of warm, sticky blood was everywhere. Just past my initial line of sight, I saw the two of them on the floor. Chubbs had crumpled, curling in on himself the way a leaf would just before it fell from the tree in autumn. Liam was slumped over him, his face the color of ice, and he was looking at me, watching with unblinking eyes that had faded from a pale blue to a dull gray. His arm had been thrown out over Chubbs, like he had tried to shield him, and now those same hands that had held my face so gently between them. They were in the pool of dark liquid gliding along the concrete floor. The gun slipped out of my hand. Clancy skirted around Albin's desk, watching me with that same faint smile. He dropped what looked like a lighter into the trash can. "Not real." I forced the words through my mind. "Not them." I forced myself to look again. Really look, no matter how horrifying the image was. Chubbs's glasses were gold instead of silver. Liam's hair was longer than it was now. Clancy clearly hadn't made as close of a study of the way his hair curled at the ends as I had. It was a painfully close, near flawless imitation. But it wasn't them. I let Clancy come up beside me and allowed him 3 seconds of thinking he'd be able to slip by me, distracted as I was by my own grief. He was murmuring something in low, husky tones. He was close enough now for me to feel his warm breath on my cheek, which meant he was also close enough for me to punch him in the throat. I threw my mind at him in the same blow, drawing it down like a knife and shredding the image of Chubbs and Liam he'd pushed there. Clancy stumbled out into the hallway, clutching his head, gasping for breath. The image of the woman in the white lab coat filtered through our connection again, but I forced myself to push it away for now. There was a line of smoke rising up from the trash can. I tipped it over, scattering the burning pages onto the ground, stamping out the flames under my boot. If he wanted these pages gone, I wanted to see them.
"Damn it!"
He was panting when I met him again in the hallway, heaving in a deep breath, falling to his knees. There was some thin, fraying line of connection between our minds. I seized it before it could snap completely, flooding his brain with the illusion of heat. I couldn't see him in the dark, but I could hear him frantically slapping at his arms and legs, at the limbs his mind was telling him were burning down to the bone. Then his hand slowed to a stop.
"You,"
Clancy began,
You really want to play this game?
There was a kiss of cold metal against the back of my neck, so suddenly that I had already convinced myself it was another one of his mind games. But when you lose a sense like sight, it's true what they say. The rest of them are sharpened to ruthless efficiency. I felt the warm breath, heard the squeak of additional boots, smelled his sweat. Agents. They'd found us. Clancy twisted away to run. I didn't see it happen, only heard the sickening crack as something hard connected with his head and sent him crumpling to the ground. And there was Jarvin's voice in the dark saying, "I knew you'd be back." There were his hands, as one closed over the back of my neck and roughly shoved me down to my knees. The barrel slid down to the sweet spot where my skull met my spine. "Rob said all we'd have to do is wait." In their fatigues, he and the other League agent behind him were a shade lighter than the air around them. The safety switched off. "You don't want to do this," I warned, feeling the invisible hands inside of my mind unfurl. I felt anxious, but not afraid. Controlled calm. "No," Jarvin agreed. "I'd rather do this." There was a faint click, the only warning before the white noise flooded the hallway and drowned me alive. It was possible to forget that kind of agony after all. There was a time in my life, a few months into my stay at Thurmond, that they had turned the white noise on nearly every day. Back when there were reds to control and oranges to punish, a single wrong look would have a PSF radioing into the control tower. It was a given part of my life. Maybe I had just grown so used to it, the actual impact dulled over time. But it had been months, and the onslaught of pain twisted my stomach to the point of sickness. I collapsed onto the floor, close enough to Clancy that I could see the cut across his forehead seeping blood. There were thoughts in my head. There was a voice that said, "You can take Jarvin. You can take him. You can ruin him." But even that was silenced as the white noise rose and fell over us like a wave, crushing down on my chest. And it was amazing. Everything we could do, the kind of power we could have over others, it all meant nothing. It all came to nothing. At Thurmond, we would have heard two warning blares, and a heartbeat later, the noise would explode from the camp's loudspeakers. It wasn't something that could be easily described. It was shrieking static, cranked up, sharpened to drill through the thickest part of your skull. It passed through us like an electrical current, making our muscles jump and twitch and sing with pain, until the only thing left to do was to try to drive your head into the ground to escape it. If I were lucky, I wouldn't pass out. I wasn't so lucky. I felt myself fade, drift back into the darkness of the hallway. I couldn't move my arms out from where they were pinned under my chest. My legs had turned to air. Finally, seeing that I couldn't so much as lift my head, Jarvin switched it off. I drifted from one moment to the next, my ears ringing. The blackness of the hall pulled me in, pushing my head under its murky surface. When I came to again, someone had a grip on my arm. I could hear Jarvin talking to the others around him, only because he was shouting now. "Get the damn lights on! I don't care what you have to do! Switch them on, damn it! Something's going on! Can someone just give me a damn light?" It was a warm southern voice that answered him.
"Sure, brother. I got you covered."
There was a snap, just one, and the tiniest flame appeared in the dark, illuminating Cole Stewart's furious face. I thought, at first, he'd struck a match, but the fire at his fingertips bloomed, swallowing his hand, devouring the arm he sent flying toward Jarvin's face. There was screaming, so much screaming, as the fires around us grew, catching the soldiers behind him and engulfing them in a wave of heat that sent them running down the hall, stumbling over one another until they finally collapsed. The smell of burned skin made my stomach convulse. I couldn't escape it.
"Holy shit, you're..."
one of the agents began to say. "One of us," my mind finished, shutting down at the sight of the fire between Cole's fingers again. The way he threw a ball of it at the agent who had spoken. How he stoked it, letting it rip over the screaming man's body until I could only see the dark silhouette trapped in the flames dancing over his skin. Red.
No.
No, he was... Cole was too old. He wasn't...
Hey! Hey!
The fire was gone now, but Cole's hands were still hot to the touch as he tried to haul me to my feet. My legs still weren't there. He tried lightly slapping my face.
Shit, kid, come on. You can do this. I know you can.
You...
I tried to say.
You just...
He let out the breath he'd been holding, relieved. Cole lifted me over his shoulder, smacking the back of my thighs in irritation.
Damn it, Jem, making me worry like that. I heard the calm control from down the hall, but I had to wait until he turned it off. I couldn't get close. I'm sorry. I'm so sorry.
He kicked the door open to Alban's office, dropping me to the ground behind the desk, rearranging my limbs so I was at least sitting up, and unholstered one of his handguns to press into my limp fingers. Then he gripped my face between his palms.
You can't tell. You hear me? No one else can know, not even Liam, especially not Lee. Okay? Nod your head.
Jesus. Liam didn't know? No one else knew about this?
You, me, Kate, and Alban, Cole said as if reading my thoughts. That's it. And we're now a party of three. You tell, and it's over for me.
I nodded. Other one, I said weakly, tilting my head toward the hall. Cole grunted.
I don't do the damsel in distress thing with dudes.
I shot him what I hoped was a glare and not a cross-eyed look. He sighed and stood, squaring his shoulders in the way Liam always did when he was set on something. Cole disappeared for a second, ducking back out to grab Clancy. I doubted he even looked at Clancy's face before he dumped him next to me.
The Greens sent us the message you were here, so we decided to start the party early, he explained. Couldn't wait one more day to see this handsome mug, could you?
I coughed, trying to clear whatever was lodged in my throat.
If you know what's good for you, you'll stay in here, he snapped. Leave this room before we give the all clear, and I'll skin your ass.
When he turned for the door, it was like his confidence and control clicked back into place. His movements were smooth, assured. I don't know how much time passed before the sound of the firefight reached us. 5 minutes, 10, maybe even 15. Feeling was returning to my limbs in hot rushes of pins and needles, but I preferred the pain to limp uselessness. When I could, I pushed myself onto my knees and began to shove Alban's old desk against the door. I knew it wouldn't provide much cover or pose much of a challenge to anyone hell-bent on getting in, but it felt better than doing nothing. And, if I were being honest, it was a visual block for me, too. A reminder that I needed to wait and let Cole and the others clean out Jarvan's infestation before I went to find the others.
They're all right. They're all right. You're all right.
I crawled back over to the filing cabinets, drawing my legs up to my chest and wrapping my arms around them, trying to cage in the feelings that felt too big to keep inside.
They are okay.
Clancy shifted beside me, a stray lock of dark hair falling into his eyes. As much time as we had spent together at East River, I'd never seen him sleep before. He would never, I realized, ever let someone else be around him while he was so vulnerable. My eyes drifted over to the trash can and the papers I'd spilled out of it. I crawled over to them on my hands and knees, scooping up the flashlight Clancy had dropped. There was so much shouting happening outside of that dark room that I couldn't understand what any one voice was saying. I took a deep breath as the shooting eased off and the doors to the staircase slammed open and shut repeatedly.
They are okay. You are okay.
I aimed the flashlight away from the door, down at the scorched pages I'd gathered into my lap, A quarter of the pages or so were unreadable. Sizable holes had burned through the photographs and pages. Aside from the smears of soot and smoke stains from the top sheets, the bottom of the stack was in much better shape. Most were charts and graphs, all in that same strange scientific language that would have tripped up even Chubbs. These were medicines, medical terms. They had the same sort of complicated names as the list of medicines Chubbs had given me in Nashville. Every now and then, my eyes would catch a few stray words of plain English. Subject A is free of symptoms following the procedure and routine. Showing signs of passive behavior. Conclusive results are pending. But at the top of them all, printed in bold black text, were two words I did recognize. Project Snowfall. I only stopped flipping through the pages when I reached the photographs, the one that showed the woman's face. It was one of the unexpected drawbacks to living almost half of your life locked away in a camp, with no access to any kind of media. You got the feeling that every face you encountered on TV or in the papers was somehow familiar, but the name would slide away from you before you could grasp it. I felt it now, staring at the familiar blonde woman. The shot itself was strange. She was glancing over her shoulder, but not into the camera itself. There was an unmarked brick building behind her that seemed oddly run down in comparison to the neat, classic navy dress suit she was wearing. The look on her face wasn't afraid so much as nervous, and I wondered, for a second, if she rightfully thought someone was tailing her. The next photo was smaller, torn in a way that made me think Alban had started to rip it up, only to change his mind. In this one, she sat between the former leader of the League and a much younger President Gray. The connection stole my breath.
Clancy. No, please, Clancy.
Holy shit, I whispered. The woman I'd seen in his mind? This was the First Lady of the United States. I reached for the other scattered pages, gathering them back up in a pile. Out of their proper order, the documents and reports didn't make much sense, but there were diagrams of brains with tiny, neat X's marked over them. I skimmed through the newspaper articles describing charity work Lillian Gray had done across the country. Someone had highlighted different key phrases about her family, a sister in Westchester, New York, parents retired to their farm in Virginia, a brother recently deceased, and her different school degrees, including the PhD she'd earned in neurology from Harvard. She'd also given a touching eulogy at the vice president's funeral, flanked by the smoking wreckage of the Capitol, and had refused to comment on the president's reluctance to immediately replace him. The last article I found was focused on her disappearance from public life shortly after the attack on Washington, D.C. In it, the president was quoted as saying, "My wife's protection and security is my number one concern," with no other details given. And that was her legend. Not the dozens of award ceremonies she'd attended, not her groundbreaking research in systems neuroscience, or any of the parties she'd hosted on her husband's behalf. Not her treasured only son. According to the Time article Alban had slipped into the folder, there were rumors that she'd been killed or abducted by a hostile country shortly after the outbreak of IAAN. It became especially alarming when Clancy went out on the road alone on his father's behalf to praise the camp rehabilitation program, showing himself to be its first successful subject. It had been nearly 10 years, and she had yet to show her face publicly. But here she was in this folder, her face, her research, her handwritten notes. I clenched my hands into fists and released them several times, trying to force them to stop shaking. There were three notes mixed into the mess of documents, each only a few lines long. There were no envelopes, but the sheets were still sticky with whatever they had been sealed with. Someone must have passed this to him by hand, then, rather than risk sending it digitally. Alban's clear cursive had filled in the dates at the top, likely for his own record-keeping. The first, from 5 years before, read, "No matter what's become of us,
I need to get out of his reach if I'm going to save him. If you help me disappear, I'll help you in return. Please, John. The next, 2 years later. Enclosed are the most recent findings of our work. I'm feeling incredibly optimistic. This will all be over soon. Tell me you found him. And the final, from only 2 months before. I'm not going to sit around waiting for your approval. That was never our deal. I'm leaking the location onto the server tonight. If he doesn't come looking for me, then I'll find him myself. Clancy was still out cold, his head lolled to the side. I watched the steady rise and fall of his chest, something sharp twisting low in my gut. You sad son of a bitch, I whispered. This was why he'd come here. This was the task he couldn't entrust to anyone other than himself. I combed through the pages again, trying to decipher exactly what she'd been working toward. A part of me had suspected it had something to do with us when I saw the diagrams, but why would she be secretly running her own experiments about the cause of IAAN at the same time Leda Corp was? There was that mention she made in her first note of needing to get out of his reach. Was it possible she thought her husband would tamper with the results of what Leda Corp would find, and that the misinformation would jeopardize Clancy's life? But then, why would he want to destroy this? I flipped back to the pages of charts and graphs, and there, at the bottom of each page, were the initials LG. I combed through the pages again, making sure I was looking at each and every one. Why had he wanted to destroy this? To protect his mother's whereabouts? To destroy proof that she was somehow providing information to Albin about her research? None of this made sense to me. Her final note said she was leaking the location. Her location? Onto a server. That was in line with Nico's earlier explanation that the word professor, one that Clancy had asked him to watch for, came up on the server. But she only leaked it when she was ready. Only after Project Snowfall was complete. She didn't want him to know what she was working on, I realized. But why go find him? Why let him find her, when it was obvious that he was the only one she truly needed to be protected from? 30. The lights and machines around Albin's office came back on in an explosion of noise and static. And I was up and off the ground before the radio scanner clicked on, blasting the room with a rousing choral rendition of O Come All Ye Faithful. I drew my hand up in a weak attempt to block the glare as I stumbled toward the corner of the office. My eyes were watering, and I couldn't see any of the radio dials, so I settled for slapping and turning them all until the sound finally dropped to a bearable level. After the white noise, even a faint scratch against the door would have sounded like thunder. For a long, terrible minute, I forced myself to stay still and readjust to the world of light, just as long as it took Clancy to let out a low moan and start to shake his head. And for me to realize my window for being able to control him was slamming shut. The fighting outside had faded into a lone spray of bullets firing one floor up. It was a risk to assume that they'd already cleared this level of rogue agents, but reason had overridden my fear. Most of the agents would have been on the first level, in their quarters, asleep when Cole and the others had entered the building, with a few, like Jarvan, on patrol. I would be fast. If the hallway was clear, I could go down to find the others after taking care of this. Make sure Liam and Chubbs were tucked away with Jude and Vida in the safety of the barricaded sleeping room. I just couldn't leave him in here, not with the locks already busted. I circled my arms around Clancy's chest from behind, trying to get a good grip on him, and tearing off one of his coat's gold buttons in the process.
You are,
I gasped, feeling the stitches in my back pull,
officially the biggest pain in my ass.
I had to drop him to shove the desk out of the way again. I took one more step out, taking a deep breath to steady myself against the sight of Jarvan's and the other agents' bodies, but the hallway was empty. As I dragged him out into it, I had a thought, a brief one, of pulling him into the infirmary, but I could see figures moving in there behind the curtains, and I wasn't sure I was willing to take the bet it was someone from Cole's team. There were any number of doors along the hall, most of them leading into rooms I had never been allowed to see. But there was only one closet that was open, and the rack of guns in there had been picked clean, leaving enough room for a human body to be shoved in. I had just angled Clancy into the tight space when I heard my name shouted for the whole damn base to hear. I whipped around, searching for the source. Kate was suddenly there, rushing out of the infirmary, pulling the rifle strap off her shoulder. She ripped the black ski mask off her head and let it fall behind her. I was in her arms, in her warmth, before I had the sense to brace myself for the impact. A relief I didn't expect passed down through me as I leaned into her. "What are you doing?" she asked. And I was honestly still so shocked at her appearance, I actually told her the truth. "Locking Clancy Gray in a closet?" She pulled back sharply, looking down at the prone form at our feet, and Kate, for the first time in her life, didn't ask me if I wanted to talk about how I was feeling. I didn't need to explain why we couldn't leave him in the infirmary or in one of the rooms where he might escape. She knew what he was and what he was worth. "Okay, I'll go get the keys." "Kate," I said, catching her arm, "is it over?" She smiled. "It was over 10 minutes ago."
"Really?"
My voice was small in my own ears. I felt 5 years old, the way I had after getting lost in a mall and suddenly finding my dad's hand again after frantically searching for him. I knew it was stupid to cry, but exhaustion had brought me to the breaking point, and the sudden, unexpected release of fear and pain pushed me past it. Kate stepped toward me, taking my face between her hands. It was like staring into a full moon rising as it cut through the night.
"I knew you could do this."
I squeezed my eyes shut and a white tent bloomed behind my lids. There was Mason, taking his last breath, the smell of a stiff leather muzzle, Rob screaming, screaming, screaming. I wanted to tell her everything, to unload it on her and let her share the crushing weight of it. She had offered to so many times, and every single instance I'd shot her down, thrown it back in her face. Even now, I felt that same reluctance wrap around my chest, trying to protect the weak, beating muscle there.
"It was horrible," I whispered.
She smoothed a stray tear away from my cheek.
"And you were stronger."
I shook my head.
"I wasn't. I was..." How could I put it in a way she'd understand?
"That's not what Jude and Vida told me." I opened my eyes, searching her face for any sign of a lie.
"Are they okay?"
"They're fine," she promised. "Worried about you. I can take you up to them. But first, I think we need to take care of our little problem." She nodded toward Clancy. "All right?"
"Yeah,"
I said, taking a deep, shuddering breath.
"All right."
Cole and Kate's team had moved the kids into the atrium and shut the doors, blocking the steady flow of bodies that were being lifted out of the residence hall and brought down to the infirmary. They were the agents that overthrew Albin, all of them. A part of me thought it was ridiculous they were trying to keep us from seeing it. Another part of me felt grateful. I took a breath, shaking the tension out of my shoulders, then reached for the door. They'd pushed most of the tables to the outer edges of the room, leaving the center of the room open for cots. Some of the kids and agents were being treated by the medical staff for bumps and scrapes. It seemed insane that they were ignoring the fully stocked infirmary in favor of hauling gauze and antiseptic up here, until I remembered that same infirmary was currently functioning as a makeshift morgue.
"Are all of them dead?"
I asked quietly. In addition to the 20-odd League kids huddled at the center of the room, eating whatever it was they'd dug out of the kitchen store for breakfast, there were something like 40 agents ringing the perimeter of the room in clusters of black. But these were the faces that I had expected to see, Agents who were in charge of psi teams, instructors, the ones who looked at us with sad, longing eyes when they thought we weren't looking. The ones who wouldn't stand down, Kate said carefully. So, all of them. I know, it must have felt like they were all against you, but there were a number of agents who were blindsided by Albin's assassination and only stayed because it was too late to get out without retribution from Jarvan. They didn't put up a fight when we swept the sleeping quarters and were free to leave if they didn't want a part of this. My eyes didn't stop scanning the room until they'd found them all. Chubbs and Liam stood in front of one of the televisions, their backs to me as they watched news coverage of some kind of white-domed building. Jude and Vida were near them, crouched on the floor in front of Nico, who looked like he was making a real effort to curl up into a ball and disappear forever. Kate followed my gaze. We'll talk about that later.
Talk about what?
Came the drawl behind us. I felt a heavy arm drop over my shoulder.
Could it be about little old moi?
I tried to tug myself free, but he held me there, ruffling my already disastrous hair. I couldn't keep myself from flinching when I smelled the smoke on him. Red. Sigh. Impossible. I rubbed the back of my hand against my forehead. He was so together. When Mason had been crumbling from the inside out. And it wasn't that Cole wasn't intimidating. He was. In a way that disarmed you and left you flustered. It was that every other Red I had come across at Thurmond acted like an animal that had been caged by his own skin. They refused to meet anyone's eyes, walking around with these vacant looks, listening to a voice in their mind, I think, that the rest of us couldn't hear. Every once in a while they'd come back to themselves, a hunger darkening their faces. You'd catch them staring at another kid, these little twisted smiles tucked into the corner of their mouths. And you knew what would come next. But Cole not only had kept himself in check, he'd flourished. Red. The two of them shared a look over my head. He mentioned that you've been trusted with a very important secret? I didn't say anything, not because I couldn't think of a response, but because I couldn't pick one out of the thousands of questions billowing through my mind. Finally, I turned to him and settled on, "How long have you known?"
"Since I was 12," he said. "Late bloomer, compared to the rest of you. Scared me shitless. Mom and Harry always thought I was sneaking in matches or lighters, burning things to act out. It's not the kind of thing you talk about if you don't want to get bussed to some god-awful camp, you know?"
"Why not tell Lee?" I asked. "Why keep it from him?" Cole's eyes narrowed.
"I have my reasons, none of which is your business. You gave me your word you wouldn't."
"I won't," I said, hating him for it. Another thing to keep from him. Another lie. How is this even possible? You're too old. Are there more like you? No wonder Alman had valued him. A sigh who could move among the adults, never detected. Just because he missed the supposed age cutoff? Kate glanced around, making sure there were no prying ears nearby. Far, far, far fewer. A few hundred age outliers. But it's not the time to talk about it. We have bigger concerns right now.
Speaking of which,
Cole lowered his voice as he leaned down.
You couldn't have mentioned Damsel in Distress number 2 was the president's kid?
Let's see how many words you can get out after having your brain scrambled.
Fair.
He glanced at Kate.
Is he going to be a problem?
He's in closet B2, she said, raising her brows in what looked to me like a challenge.
Okay. Okay. He said. This first, that later. There weren't any guns left in there, right?
I don't know who looked more irritated at the suggestion, Kate or me. Cole was still smirking when he asked,
"You bring back the big prize, along with my jerk-ass little brother?"
I patted my pockets, feeling for the small plastic rectangle. I held it out to them, suddenly eager for someone other than me to carry its weight for a few minutes. Cole glanced at Kate.
All yours. You're still heading out soon, right?
In a minute. I need to tell my kids where I'm going.
Because they won't know what to do with themselves without Mommy fussing over them every 2 seconds.
At that, I really did wrench myself away from him, feeling my temper spike dangerously. Cole held up his hands and backed away a step.
Take a joke, Jim. Smile. Today's a good day, remember? Solid win.
Where are you going? I asked Kate. Out with a few agents to try to find some kind of transportation for all of us. But I'll be back in a few hours, I promise. I think you know that it probably wouldn't be right to stay here after this. Where are we going? I asked. Kansas or Georgia?
Roo!
It was impressive we'd been able to stand there for that long before Jude's radar started to ping. He was up and on his feet, pushing through the agents standing between us, nearly tripping over a group of kids who were clearly just trying to sit and eat and not burst into tears. Out of the corner of my eye, I saw Chubbs and Liam turn around, but just as quickly, they were gone, and the only thing in my world was Jude as he threw his long arms around me.
You scared the crap out of me,
he said. I hugged him back, my one kid welcoming committee. I was worried about you, too, I said. Did anything happen? He shook his head, curls flying.
Did you find him?
I told you she was fine. Vida put a hand on his shoulder and tried to peel him off by force.
Judith! Unclench!
Kate laughed, patting his back. Come on, I have to tell you two and Nico something. That was enough for Jude to ease up just a bit.
He still won't talk. I can't get him to say a word. He, like, shut down.
I gave a faint wave as she led him and Vida back over to Nico.
Ah, Cole muttered.
I felt him stiffen, adjusting his posture from a casual slump to one that was solid, collected. Even his face seemed to harden. He kicked off where he had been leaning against the wall and pushed past me without another word. He threw a single warning glance over his shoulder. That was less than what he gave Liam, and even less than what Liam gave him, as they brushed past each other and continued in opposite directions. I met Chubbs's look dead on, and the expression there was enough to tell me there'd be a story later.
Alive, 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 my heart sang.
I let the poisonous memory of what Clancy had shown me bleed out, until there was nothing but the buzzing brightness in my chest. It took my breath away. Alive! The dirt on their faces was nothing. The cut that had reopened on Liam's chin was nothing. The crack in one of Chubbs's lenses was nothing. They were everything. The two of them stood in front of me, arms crossed over their chests, wearing identical disapproving looks. Are you guys okay? I asked, since they clearly weren't about to say anything.
Are you? Liam shot back. What were you thinking, going after him like that?
I bristled at his tone. I was thinking that he let himself be dragged here for a reason, and I was right. I reached into my pocket, fishing out one of the photos from the folded stash of documents. Chubbs eyed the stained paper I held out with a measure of distaste.
That blood wasn't in your body at one point, was it?
I pressed it against his chest, forcing him to take it. I tracked him to Albin's office. That's what he was after. Liam leaned over to look. They didn't have the same mental block I did, apparently. Recognition lit up their eyes. Chubbs's jaw actually dropped. He's looking for her, I said. The photos were in a file with what I think is research she was conducting. I don't know if he thought she was here or he knew Albin might have some kind of clue, but... Cole climbed up onto the table at the center of the room, clapping his hands twice. He cupped his hands around his mouth.
Can I get your attention?
There was a formality to his tone that sounded unnatural. The coal of sly smiles and infuriating teasing had apparently retired for the morning. Agent Stewart had no time for him.
All right, I'll make this quick.
The agents and kids in the room were shifting, flowing around the cots and tables so they were standing in front of him.
What happened here? It's done. You did your part beautifully, and while I wish I could say they wouldn't have gone through with their plan in the end, I think we all know that'd be a damn lie.
Liam shifted, leaning back against the wall in the exact pose his brother had assumed a few minutes before. He kept his eyes focused on me, clearly waiting for something.
Look, I'm not one for pretty speeches. I'm not going to lie because you've been lied to all your goddamn lives, and it's got to stop. Here's what you need to know.
He cleared his throat.
When Alban started this whole thing, he only ever wanted to expose the truth about IAAN and for Gray to own up about the camps. More than anything, he wanted this country to go back to what it was before, the place he was proud of and was happy to serve. The Children's League was his dream, even if it turned to shit in the end. He wanted that life again. But I say we can't go back.
I turned more fully toward him, stepping around Chubbs to get a better look. The other kids watched, riveted. Why wouldn't they be? It was the same as all of those times I'd heard Liam speak about freeing the camps. The passion behind their words undercut all the doubt they claimed to have about their ability to express themselves. They let themselves burn when so many of us were afraid to be warmed by the fire. He's one of us, I thought. The others had no idea, and they still felt that this was right, that he was supposed to be taking charge. Liam scoffed, rolling his eyes. Chubbs and I glanced at each other, and I wondered if he could feel the wave after wave of disappointment Liam was sending our way, too.
It's forward or nowhere for us now. We, all the folks who came back, are leaving this place, and this name, behind. I don't know what we'll be yet or if we'll take another name, but I know what we're going to do. We're going to figure out what the hell happened to cause IAAN, expose anyone responsible, and get those poor damn kids out of those cesspools of misery. We are leaving. We are going up to the ranch. There are agents reopening it right now. We want you to come. We want to fight. We want you.
Kate stood from where she'd been sitting with the others and gave me a wave as she exited through the door on the other side of the room. Vida, Jude, and Nico didn't look up as she left. They were nodding, letting Cole's promises sweep them up in the heady rush of possibility. I felt it fluttering inside me, too. There were no advisors feeding him lines, no locked filing cabinets, no dark hallways. This was honest. Real.
What's the ranch? Chubbs whispered.
It's the League's old temporary headquarters near Sacramento, I said. They shuttered it when they finished this one.
We want you, Cole repeated, his eyes sliding our way. But it's your choice.
I met his gaze dead on, trying not to roll my eyes as he winked. He knew he had me. And so did Liam. He shoved away from the wall, but he let me catch him by the jacket as he passed. His shoulders shook with each deep, ragged breath he drew in. After days of regaining his strength and coloring, Liam was back to looking a step away from collapsing. His skin was ashy and his eyes burning as he stared at me.
"Tell me you're leaving with us today," Liam whispered. "Chubbs and me. I know you're too smart to buy all that bullshit. I know you."
He saw the answer in my face. His hands captured my wrists and pushed them away. Just before Liam reached the door, he turned back and said, his voice hoarse,
"Then I have nothing left to say to you."
Cole disappeared after his speech, muttering something about going to check on it, without giving another word of explanation to what or who it was. I had half the mind to follow him and make sure it wasn't Clancy Gray, but I'm not sure I could have stood up from the table if I had tried. The five of us, Jude, Vida, Chubbs, Nico, and I, had claimed one of the circular tables near a TV,
mostly, I think, to stay out of the way of the agents who were trying to retire the building and strip anything and everything they might need from it. An hour had passed, more than enough time for Jude to ask, "Is Kate back yet?" and me to start worrying about Liam. It felt like the longer I sat there, though, the heavier my limbs became, until I was mimicking Nico across the table and resting my head on my arms, easing that weight off my shoulders. "She said it'd take a while," Vida said, checking the time on her old chatter again. "There's 70 of us. That's a lot of wheels to round up."
"We're coming to you live from the Texas State Capitol building, where President Gray and representatives from the Federal Coalition will start the Unity Summit in less than 15 minutes now."
Jude reached over to turn the volume up. He'd been the picture of calm all morning. There hadn't been so much as a whimper of how hungry or tired he was. Of our sad group, he was the only one who was actually paying attention to the screen. Nico had retreated so far in on himself, he was basically comatose. Chubbs kept glancing between the watch on his wrist and the door. The news coverage of the Christmas Day Peace Summit had started 15 minutes before at 9 o'clock Texas time. There were mostly crowd shots, and of that only a very small section. When the cameraman had accidentally panned over a group of protesters and their signs, all of which were being kept as far from the building as possible, the feed had been cut. Cole slid into the space between Jude and me, nearly knocking the kid off the bench.
"Hey, Jem? Need to borrow you for a sec."
I turned and buried my face deeper into my arms. "Can it wait?"
"It is awake and very angry, and I would appreciate some guidance on how to approach, seeing as you are the only one who might be able to tell me if he's trying to melt my brain."
"People know what he really is?" Chubbs asked, surprised.
"You told them?"
"Alban already knew," Cole said. "He saw Clancy influencing one of his Secret Service agents during one of his press tour stops after he got out of camp."
I sat up at that. If Alban already knew what Clancy was and what he could do, Lillian Gray's first note could be taken a whole different way. I need to get out of his reach if I'm going to save him. Lillian might have realized, even before President Gray had, that her son was using his abilities to influence the people around him. The timeline was coming together for me finally. Alban would have seen Clancy do this just before he left to join the League. He removed himself from, as Lillian called it, Clancy's reach. If she had tried asking her husband or any one of his advisors for help disappearing, Clancy would have had access to that information. It really had been a plan of desperation.
"Then why the hell didn't he do anything with that?" came Liam's voice behind us.
The lines in his face deepened with his frown.
"That could have blown the whole camp charade apart."
Cole rolled his eyes.
"And he was going to prove it how. The kid was a ghost. We tried to put feelers out to see if he'd come willingly, but he never bit."
"Because he doesn't need you," Nico said, his voice hoarse. "He doesn't need any of us. He takes care of himself."
I opened my mouth to explain my theory, but Liam cut me off.
"Shouldn't you be helping the others clean the place out?"
he asked pointedly. He stared at the place where Cole's hand was on my shoulder. It was insane to see them standing side by side like this, wearing almost identical expressions of anger on almost identical faces.
"Feel free to leave any time, Lee," Cole said, dismissing him with a wave. "No one's keeping you here. I told you how to find Mom and Harry, so go on. Run back and hide. I wish I could be there when you explained to them how you almost managed to fuck over an entire group of kids because you're too idiotic to pay attention to what you're doing and where you're going. After you tell them about what happened when you tried to break out of your camp, of course."
I heard Vida swear under her breath, slamming a hand down on Chubbs's arm to keep him from trying to jump in. There was no one there to check me. "Stop it," I said.
"Listen to yourself."
"You!" A flush of red swept up Liam's neck, and he was visibly struggling to keep his face in check.
You have no idea.
Oh, don't cry about it, Cole said, standing. Haven't you already embarrassed me enough? Just go. Jesus, just go already if you want out so damn bad. Stop wasting my time.
Guys?
Jude's voice went high, cracking on the word.
Guys!
Please, I tried again. Just... Jude leaned over the table and grabbed my arm, turning me back in the direction of the television.
Shut up and look!
President Gray had exited his car and was looking around at the crowds, lifting his hand in a well-practiced wave. His hair was grayer than I remembered it being even a few months ago. Heavier bags rimmed his dark eyes. But it was still Clancy's face, a glimpse of what he'd look like in 30 or 40 years. And for that alone, I wanted to look away.
What's...
Vida began, just as the camera panned to a small hooded figure shoving his way past the pretty blonde broadcaster, leaping over the police boundaries. The president was slowly making his way up the pristine white steps of the Capitol, his hand outstretched toward the governor. Behind him, both the American and Texas state flags were swaying with the breeze. He didn't seem to notice something was wrong until the men in suits beside him pulled their guns, and the governor's face went white as bone. The police officers that lined the steps were thrown to each side, shoved through the air with such force that they smashed through the lines of cameramen and photographers. He hadn't needed to touch them, only slash his arms out in front of him like he was throwing open a heavy curtain.
"Christ," Liam said behind me, "that's a kid."
He was slight, all lean muscles and tan skin, like a runner who'd spent his summer out on a high school track. His hair was long, tied back with a small elastic to keep it out of his face. It gave him a clear view as he swung the small gun up from his sweatshirt's pockets and calmly fired two shots into the president's chest. The TVs, each tuned to a different station, erupted at the exact same moment, catching the scene from every angle.
"Oh my God! Oh my—"
The newscaster was moaning. She dropped to the ground. All we could see was the back of her head as she watched the police and Secret Service pile on top of the kid, burying him under a sea of uniforms and coats. The crowd behind her was screaming. The camera shook as it swung around to capture their escape from the scene. Every look of terror, every look of disgust, all turned now from the president himself to the kid who'd just killed him.
"Did you do this?"
Liam snarled, swinging back toward his brother.
"Did you order that kid to do that?"
"He's not one of us," Vida said. "I've never seen that piece of shit in my life."
Cole spun on his heel, diving headlong into the stunned silence in the atrium. No one was moving aside for him, and I had no idea where he was going. Vida grabbed the remote and turned the volume up.
"Ladies, ladies and gentlemen, please."
The broadcaster was still on the ground, trying to protect herself from the stampede of bystanders fleeing the scene. The picture cut away to the horrified faces of the anchors back in the studio, but they were there for only an instant before the screen clicked to black and bold words appeared there. "Emergency alert system. The United States government has issued an emergency action notification. Do not turn off your TV at this time. Important information will follow." But the message stayed on the screens, and the only thing that did follow was the low wailing tones of the emergency alert system, the same ones we'd all heard 1,000 times as they'd run the tests on televisions and radios. There was a muffled bang that came from somewhere above us, almost inaudible under the sound of panicked voices in the atrium and the blaring television screens. 2 of them. 3. 4, all firing off in rapid succession like the crackling 4th of July fireworks we used to watch at home from my backyard. They were too far away to be truly frightening. For a moment, I wondered if they were fireworks. Were people really crass enough to already be celebrating President Gray's apparent demise? It all washed away with the overpowering sound of rushing water. No, more like static. A ferocious wave of noise, cracking, snapping, hissing, like a rolling hurricane. And then it all cut out, with a low, mechanical whine, the kind an animal might make as it took its last breath.
The lights, the TVs, the air conditioning, everything switched off, throwing us back into the same impenetrable darkness we'd just left. If Jude hadn't still been gripping my arm, I would never have been able to catch him as he swayed toward the ground.
"Whoa!" I began.
Vida was instantly at our side, helping me lower him back into a seat.
Something just happened.
The agents around us were snapping on glow sticks, illuminating the room in that small way. I could see his hands clenched in his hair. The expression on his face was dazed, drunk almost.
Something bad.
What do you mean? I asked, letting Chubbs in closer to look. His eyes were still slightly unfocused.
It was a big burst, like a flare, and then it was gone. Everything is so quiet. Nothing's talking anymore.
I scanned the room, searching for the team of yellows. They were in the exact same dazed state, limp and unresponsive to the other kids' efforts to get them on their feet. I could see their faces in the faint, dying light of the glow sticks.
"What the hell?" I heard Chubb say. "Another rolling blackout?"
I shushed him, trying to listen as an agent quickly ran down the situation for Cole as they made their way back over to us.
"Backup generator is still up and running. No cell or radio connections available. The cameras on the streets have shut off. Bennett is trying to get them restarted."
"Don't bother," Cole said calmly. "They're most likely fried."
Fried? But that would mean... It was too much of a coincidence for the power to have gone out at that moment. But what Cole was suggesting wasn't that someone had tampered with Los Angeles's power grid. He thought someone had disabled every single piece of electronic equipment throughout the city.
"You think it was some kind of electromagnetic pulse?" another agent pressed. "I think we better get our asses moving before we find out."
Cole cupped his hands around his mouth, shouting over the panicked whispering.
"All right, I know you've drilled this. Take what you can carry from this room and go straight for the hole. Nothing else. Keep to your lines. Mandatory evac starts now."
Vida gathered Jude to her side, leaving me to haul Nico up from his seat.
"It could just be another blackout," an agent protested. "It can't have been in response to the assassination. Our best bet is to go down to level 3 and ride it out."
"If this is an attack," another one put in, "then the safest place for us to stay is here.
The safest place for us is out of this..."
There were three loud knocks, like someone was standing directly above us, politely asking to be let inside. I don't know why I did it, or what I even thought the noise was, but I tackled Nico to the ground, and a moment later felt Vida do the same with Jude beside me.
"Cover!"
someone screamed, but the word disappeared in the white-hot flash of light. Then the world rained down fire over our heads. 31. I didn't feel the pain right away, only the heavy pressure against my spine. I woke in total darkness with Nico shouting my name, gripping my shoulders. There was a single blessed moment where my brain was in tatters, and it couldn't connect what I was seeing and smelling and feeling with the reality of what had just happened. Everything was filtered through darkness.
"No, I have to find her first. Damn it, Liam, move!" Cole roared. "Go with the others."
"They're here," I heard Vida say. "Help me with this."
The weight pinning me on top of Nico lifted, and smoky, dust-stained air flooded into my lungs. I coughed, my hand sliding across the floor until I found what felt like a glow stick. It wasn't. It was someone's finger, and it wasn't attached to his body. I was hauled up and onto my feet, held there until my knees solidified.
"Everyone," I started to say.
"Bunker busters," Vida said. "We gotta go."
"Jude, I'm here," he said. "I can't see you, but I'm here."
"Everyone's here. We're all okay," Chubbs cut in. "Tell us where to go."
"Down,"
I coughed, clearing the thick dust coating my tongue and throat. My eyes were adjusting now, and I was realizing that the dull orange glow surrounding us wasn't from the glow sticks, but from the fires caused by the explosions.
Everything else rushed at me with the force of a bullet to the head. Wires were hanging down from the partially collapsed roof, along with pieces of the roof itself. And the sound of distant thunder? It was still there, louder now, firing off on a driving beat. They're bombing the city. It didn't matter who they were, not then. I wiped at the slick rush of warmth running down my jaw, glancing over to make sure Nico was okay. He and Jude were huddled together, their arms wrapped around each other. I turned on my heel, counting them off as I went. Chubbs stood, watching the dark shapes of kids and agents limping out of the west exit of the room. Liam was trying to get back to us, shoving at Cole, who was trying to force him to line up behind the others. And Vida, she was staring at the still bodies strewn across the floor, some half buried where the ceiling had actually caved in. The whole room smelled like scorched meat and smoke. Sneakers and boots were scattered, thrown off bloodied, unmoving feet.
"We can't leave them!"
Jude cried, starting to reach toward Sarah, one of the blue girls. Sarah stared back up at him, her chest caved in by the scaffolding that had fallen on her.
It's not right. We can't leave them down here. Please!
"We have to," I said. "Come on." We'd run evacuation drills a total of 2 times since I'd been with the League, both using a different exit to leave HQ. One was out through the elevator and tunnel, the way we would have normally come in. The other was an enormous stairwell that twisted and curved its way up to the surface, a short distance away from the factory that was supposed to serve as our shield. Neither of them was an option now. I could see that just by looking at Cole's face.
"Move, move, move!"
he was telling us, shoving each kid and agent through the door.
"Down to level 3. We're going out the way you came in. Follow Agent Kalb."
I tried to count the heads as they passed, but it was too dark and the smoke was too thick. The whole structure shook, throwing me forward toward Liam, who was waiting for us at the door.
"Are you okay?"
he asked in a rush of breath.
"He grabbed me. I didn't want to go."
Cole took him by the collar and hauled him out into the hallway before us. It was clear they'd been aiming for the dead center of the building. We stumbled after, a line of us, trying to navigate through the concrete, flaming rubble, and the hissing, spitting steam pipes that had burst. Still, it was some small miracle it hadn't been damaged the way the atrium had. The stairwell down to level 2 was clogged with more smoke and steam. My shirt was drenched through with sweat. I started to strip my jacket off, automatically feeling for the flash drive that wasn't there. "Kate," I thought. "Where's Kate? What's happening to Kate?" I was thrown forward into Liam's back with the next impact. One of the kids up ahead of us screamed, but all I could hear was Jude behind me whispering, "Oh God, oh my God," over and over again. I don't know what he was picturing in his head, but if it was anything like my image of being crushed under 10 tons of cement and dirt, I was surprised he could even function at all, let alone keep moving forward. The line slowed as we rounded down to the 2nd level, clogging with some problem we couldn't see. I slipped around Liam and grabbed Cole's arm to get his attention.
"What about the people in the infirmary?"
"If they couldn't get up and walk themselves out, we're not doing it for them," Cole said with a note of finality.
"What about Clancy?" I asked, though a part of me already knew the answer. "Did they let him out?"
"There was no time to clear the floor," Cole said.
I glanced back over my shoulder, wishing I could see Liam's face in the dark. I felt him, instead, hands on my waist, gently pushing me forward. Then his voice was in my ear saying, "What would he do if it were you? Me?" It didn't make it any easier to swallow the bile in my throat. It was one thing to bring a person in as a prisoner, and another to sentence him to what was very likely death.
"Are you fucking kidding me?"
Vida snarled as she and Chubbs gripped a panicking Nico and kept him going. I could see Jude's pale face behind them, looking on in horror.
"I'll get him," Nico said. "I can get him."
"No!"
Jude cried. "We have to stay together."
The aftershock of the next explosion tossed us all to our knees. I smacked my head against the wall, spots bursting in front of my eyes. I hauled myself up, and then we were all running down the steps,
through the dark hall, jumping down into the interrogation block. Sections of the wall to my right were already partly collapsed.
"Stay right behind me," Cole said, glancing back at us. "Come on, we need to be at the front."
He was able to edge his way up through the line, but everyone was bottlenecking as they reached the door to the tunnel. I could only imagine what the response would have been if the six of us tried to cut to the front of the line and follow him. We were finally close enough to see what the problem was. On the other side of the door, each kid and agent had to carefully climb over the pipes and cement that had been shaken free from the tunnel's ceiling. My blood was beating hard inside of my head, but my limbs felt hollow with panic as we waited and waited and waited for it to be our turn. Liam was bouncing on the balls of his feet like he was gearing up to bolt forward at any moment. Once we were at the door, I stopped and stepped aside to let the others go in front of me, but Liam was having none of it. He all but lifted me up and over the debris, then climbed over himself, his body the wall that kept me from turning back. I heard Vida curse behind me and Chubbs's labored grunt. The tunnel felt hot and humid with so many bodies crammed into it. The blast from above had collapsed sections of it, slowing our progress again and turning what had been a simple path into an obstacle course. I felt the thundering vibrations before the sound of the crashes actually reached my ears. It was a series of four low bangs, each louder and worse than the next. Vida shouted something up to us I couldn't hear over the vicious wave of noise that followed. My stomach, my heart, everything inside of me seemed to drop, like the tunnel had given out under me. The seconds passed at half their speed, giving me just enough time to turn away from the explosion that blew out through the door we'd just come through. We threw ourselves to the ground as a blast of gray dust and chunks of cement and glass came shooting out of the doorway. The tunnel shook so hard, I was convinced it would cave in. The kids, the agents, everyone was shouting now, but I heard Cole's voice amplified over everyone's. "Move! Move! Move!" But I couldn't. I was only able to push myself up onto my knees, drag myself up using the wall. I could hear Vida and Chubbs talking, complaining about the dark, how they couldn't see each other.
"That was HQ?" I whispered. "Did it collapse?"
"I think so," Liam said. "The tunnel back in is totally blocked off now," Chubbs called up, coughing.
The kids in front of us passed the news up through the line of people ahead of them. We heard the shock and tear-stained responses all the way from the back of the herd. Those agents, the kids, their bodies that we had to leave behind, whose families would never know what happened to them, who didn't get a chance to escape, who might have still been clinging to life when... The sob stuck in my throat, and I couldn't cough it free. I wasn't crying, but my body was shaking violently, hard enough that Liam wrapped his arms around me from behind. I felt his heart racing against my back, his face as he buried it against my neck. He was solid, and here, all of us alive. 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 We had made it out. But still, I couldn't stop seeing it, the way the ceiling must have caved. The falling glass, the floor that suddenly wasn't there, the darkness sweeping down. "Focus," I commanded myself. "There are still kids behind you. You're still not out of this. Don't let it take you, too. Liam, Chubbs, Vida, and Jude. Liam, Chubbs, Vida, and Jude."
"Just breathe. Just breathe," Liam said, his own voice shaking.
The steady pattern of it, the rise and fall of his chest beside me, was steadying enough that my grip on his side relaxed. He pressed his lips against my forehead, more out of relief than anything else, I thought.
"We're okay," I said. "We're okay. Just keep going."
My mind caught the words and carried them forward in the dark. "Just keep going." The longer we walked, the harder it became to tell the difference between my fear, my anger, and my guilt. They were a swollen mass in my chest, a rising sore. Someone ahead of us was either laughing or sobbing. The noise was so unhinged, I couldn't tell the difference. The biggest fear?
the one that kept my heart firmly lodged at the base of my throat and my knees sliding forward, forward, forward as the cement gripped at my shoulders, was knowing that, at any point, the whole thing could come down on top of us. Breathe. It should have been comforting to feel Liam pressing close behind me. We finally reached a section of the tunnel that was whole, and where we could stand at our full height. It felt better to be moving that way, like it was a sign we were almost through. But it was still so impossibly dark. No matter how many times I tried to look back, I couldn't see anything past the vague shape of Liam's face. Keep going. Head down, arms in, only going forward. Forward. Forward as fast as I could move my feet. I lost track of time. 5 minutes passed. 10 minutes, maybe. 15. The mildew smell changed to an all-out rancid stink as the drains constricted again. I kept my hands out on either side of me, letting them glide along the slick, dripping cement. Liam let out a strangled grunt as he cracked his head against the sloping ceiling, and a second later I had to duck. The standing water was thick and reeked of rotting things and mold. I heard someone start to retch, and it was like it always was. Once one person started, everyone else's stomach was heaving, too. I clawed blindly at my face, trying to clear the hair that stuck in clumps to my cheeks and neck. It snuck up on me, the suffocating. The thick, sticky air seemed to vanish, the tunnels constricted, and I couldn't see a thing, not one damn thing. We are not going to die down here. We were not just going to disappear. I tried to stay focused on the rhythmic, slow shuffle of skin against concrete and the way the water seemed to recede with the ceilings. How was it possible that the tunnel felt so different heading out than it had coming in? I felt it widen again, dipping down. It might have been my eyes adjusting to the dark, but I could have sworn it was getting lighter. I wasn't imagining it. The change had been gradual at first, a hint of a glow. But it was bright enough now that I could see Liam's surprised face as it turned down to meet mine. The tunnel filled with sounds of relief. I stood on my toes, trying to see over the heads in front of me. The smallest pinprick of light was staring us down the long tunnel, and it grew just that tiny bit larger with each step. A sudden burst of energy kicked my legs up, moving them faster and faster and faster until I could see the ladder, the figures climbing up out of the crippling dark and into the light. For a long time, there was nothing beyond the smoke. It hung around us in a curtain of graying brown, warmed only by the setting sun. The debris that had been blasted in the bombing still hadn't settled. It floated down through the open door, a fine, crushed cement that swirled as we stirred it. My arms shook the entire climb up the ladder. Cole was waiting for us at the entrance to the tunnel, gripping my arm and hauling me out before turning back to get Liam.
"God damn it! You stupid kid!"
he cried, shaking him. His voice was hoarse, and he seemed to choke on each word.
"You scared the shit out of me! When I say stay behind me, I mean stay behind! Why didn't you just leave when I told you to? Why can't you just listen to me?"
He wrapped his arms around his shoulders, and Liam, in all his relief and exhaustion, let him. I couldn't understand what they were saying to each other as they stood in front of the door, but Vida's,
"Some of us are still trying to get out, assholes," shattered the moment.
Another agent guided us down the embankment of the Los Angeles River to the spot where the others were huddled beneath the center of the bridge overhead. I pulled my shirt up over my nose and mouth to avoid breathing it in. But the chalky taste was already in my throat. I had already swallowed the day's poison down, letting it mix with the smoke and bile. The sights of Los Angeles and the warehouse district were too much for any of us to take. No one was willing to turn around and face the wreckage in the distance. We knew, all of us, that the city had been attacked, but to actually see the burning skyscrapers on the horizon, watch the black smoke funnel out and up and into the clear blue sky, was sickening. Liam and I sat down a small ways from the other kids, who were crying and hugging one another. It was enough for me that he was sitting next to me, that his shoulder was pressed against mine.
I watched them, the tears streaming down their faces, and I wished I could have let myself break down too, to clear out the twisting mass of terror still churning inside me. But out here, my exhaustion numbed me. The sight of the everyday objects scattered nearby in the river quieted the thoughts racing through my head. The dust covered cars in inches, the ground in feet. It gave way under us like playground sand. We were miles from downtown, but we were finding papers, an office chair, sunglasses, briefcases, and shoes that had been dropped and forgotten or blown out from nearby demolished buildings. The airstrike had left one Wilshire, the old skyscraper that housed the Federal Coalition, a burning black husk. I had seen it, just for a second, belching out rolling streams of smoke, turning entire city blocks dark. And all Liam could say, over and over, was, "Damn." I took a deep, steadying breath. Out of the corner of my eye, I saw Jude standing out from under the bridge, his eyes closed, his face turned up to the patch of sun that had broken through the smoke. I couldn't bring myself to stand, but I pretended I was there too, tilting my head back, letting the warmth dry the sticky, wet clumps of my hair, letting it burn away the taste of fear on my tongue, pretending we were somewhere far away from here. Liam stood as Chubbs and Vida came toward us, their dark skin plastered with silvery dust. He hooked an arm around his friend's neck, guiding him over to where I was waiting. "We heard Cole talking to some of the other agents who got out of the tunnel first. They said every car and every phone they found was dead. Cole thinks it really was some kind of electromagnetic pulse. We just couldn't tell because we were so far underground." That was one of the reasons Alban had insisted on building it so deep into the earth, for protection from that kind of thing. If Cole was right, and they had set off an EMP, everything fell into place the way Alban had assured us it would. The detonation knocked out the power station supplying electricity to HQ, but the backup generator had kicked in, at least for a time. I couldn't believe Gray, or whoever was in charge, had gone this far, had fried every vehicle, computer, and TV, ensuring he'd be helpless, defenseless. "We can't make contact with Kate," Vida said. "She's all right," I told her, hoping I didn't sound as hopeless as I felt. "The flash drive. Kate still has the flash drive. And if something had happened to Kate, then... the city?"
"Swarming with soldiers, apparently," Chubb said. "It's not good."
"Full-on invasion," Vida said, dropping next to me. She pointed to where Nico was standing at the door leading down to the tunnel. He was staring down it, as if waiting for one last person to come through. I rubbed my face with my hands, trying to clear away the image of Clancy Gray trapped down in the dark. "That's where he belongs," came the savage voice in my mind. "He was the only reason we had come here in the first place. He'd lied and risked every one of our lives. And for what? So he could work out some kind of demented mommy issue?" I didn't want to think of the dead, so I focused on the living. I kept my thoughts on the people beside me, the rare kindness life had shown in getting us out just before the whole structure collapsed. It didn't feel real to me yet, but these kids were. Liam, his head bent toward his best friend, whispering,
"We'll stay with them until we figure out how to get out of the city."
Chubbs nodding, visibly struggling not to cry. Vida lying back, her hands on her stomach, feeling its rise and fall with each deep breath she took. And Jude. I turned to my right, glancing around the circles of kids. And there he was. The dark head of curls I was looking for was walking away, chattering excitedly with some other kid. Where the hell did he think he was going? He tilted his head back toward us and was... not Jude. Why did I think that? This kid, he looked nothing like him. He was one of the greens, a good head shorter than him. Why did I think that was him? I had taken one quick glance at his hair, and it was like my mind had defaulted on memory. Why would I ever think that? Every muscle in my body, every joint, every ligament hardened to stone,
I was shaking again with the effort to move, to spin around one last time. I tried to call out for him, but the sound came out like a gasp. I brought a hand up to the base of my throat, pressing hard to dislodge whatever nightmare I had just swallowed.
"Ruby," Chubb said. "What's wrong?"
"What?" Liam said, turning toward me.
"What is it?"
"Where?" I began. "Where's Jude?" The boys shared a look, then turned to survey the kids themselves.
"Jude!" Vida called, looking around. "Judith, this isn't funny!"
I didn't see his face and the kids sitting around us, and the agents were making sure that no one left the cover of the bridge now. Faces were starting to turn toward us, including Cole's.
"He came down, right?" I asked, my voice high with panic. "He was with you guys at the back, wasn't he?"
"Oh my God." Vida's brows drew sharply together. Some dark thought flickered over her face.
"Vida!"
I grabbed the front of her sweatshirt.
"When was the last time you talked to him? When was the last time you saw him?"
"I don't know," she cried, pushing me off her.
"I don't, okay? It was so dark."
I started at a run, pushing past Vida to get to the tunnel's opening at the top of the embankment. Nico looked up at me, and I finally understood that he was waiting for Jude, not for Clancy.
"Ruby," he began, "where is he?"
"Stop," Cole said, catching my elbow.
I struggled against him, trying to twist away. Jude was down there. He was down there. And the last place I would ever leave Jude was alone in the dark.
"You were at the back, weren't you?" he continued. "I sent one of the agents down to make sure we didn't leave anyone behind. They said the whole structure must have caved in."
"Shut up,"
Liam said. He pulled me away from Cole.
"Chubbs and I will go, okay? I'm sure he just got separated from the group." "No way in hell I'm letting you back in there," Cole said. "I will knock your ass out if you take one step closer to it."
Liam ignored him.
"He could have twisted his ankle, maybe, or slipped and hit his head," Chubbs added, but he looked sick. "Maybe he's just caught in the debris."
"No,"
I snarled.
"He's my—"
"Ruby, I know, okay?" Liam said. "But you and Cole and the others need to figure out how to get us out of here, and fast. Let us do this for you at least."
"It's on me," I said. "I'm leader."
"You're not my leader," he said softly. "Remember? It'll be faster if Chubbs and I go. We'll be back before you even know we're gone. You and the others have to figure out how to get us out of here."
I shook my head. "Ruby, let them go," Vida said, taking my arm. "Come on." Cole let out a sharp, angry grunt, shoving a glow stick against his brother's chest.
"You have an hour, no more. Then we're leaving without you."
Liam glanced at Chubbs, tilting his head toward the waiting door. 32. They did not come back in an hour, or even two. I tried to guess how long it had taken us to get through the tunnels the first time. It had only been, what, a half hour? Longer? At the time, it had only felt like forever. Vida and I sat on either side of the opening, backs flush against the wall. She had her arms folded across her chest, her legs stretched out. Every few minutes, her fingers pressed hard into either arm, and she began anxiously shaking her foot. Cole and the others were arguing about splitting the group up for the third time. Most of the kids had crashed, no matter how hard they fought it. They curled up in the shade or leaned against one another's backs. Every so often, a breeze would carry Jude's whispered name up to us, spoken in the same breath as the kids who had been killed in the initial blast. 8 of them, gone in an instant, almost half our group. I caught the sound of footsteps first and pushed myself off the ground. Vida stayed exactly as she was, keeping whatever thought was skipping through her head to herself. I squinted into the darkness to find the source of the movement. I could count them by their dim, shadowed shapes as they moved up the ladder. 1, 2, 2, 2. Liam was out first, stretching a hand toward me without a single word of explanation.
I let him guide me back down the embankment, into the sunlight and away from the others. I looked over my shoulder, just the once, to see Chubbs crouch down next to Vida.
"I know," I heard her say, her voice gravelly. "Don't bother."
Liam brought my attention back to him, clearly struggling to tame his own emotions. So they hadn't found him. Now I could try. I knew Jude better than they did. There must have been miles and miles of tunnels under the city, and I'd have an easier time guessing. He turned my hand up and pressed something smooth into it. His eyes were such a fair blue, the irises the color of a new morning sky. When they drifted down, mine followed their path, down his torn shirt, across the stained skin of his wrists, to the bent, twisted remains of a small silver compass. And it was so strange how swift the numbness was to settle, how it smothered every word, every thought, until I forgot I needed to keep breathing. I felt my lips part at the same moment my chest seemed to collapse in on itself.
No!
My fingers clenched around it, hiding it from sight, denying it was there. The glass face had completely shattered, the red needle was gone, and the force of whatever had crushed it had folded it almost in half. No. It was just that one word, but it was enough to spark a blaze of furious denial.
No!
We traced the path back, Liam said, holding on to my hand like an anchor. All the way back to the entry point, as far as we could get with the debris. And...
Don't!
I begged. Don't tell me this.
I don't...
His voice choked off.
I don't know what happened. I almost didn't see him at all, but there was... I could see his shoe.
We found him, but there wasn't anything we...
Chubbs couldn't do anything. He was already gone, and we couldn't get him out. He was at the back. The explosion must have just caught him.
I threw the compass at him, and when that didn't rock him, when that didn't hurt him, I threw my fist after it, pounding against his shoulder. He caught it with his other hand and pinned both of mine to his chest.
He's lying.
It wasn't possible. I had seen him outside, looking up at the sky. I had heard him. Seen him, felt him. I felt myself rock forward, the instant before my knees went. Liam had a good enough grip on me to prevent me pitching forward, but he was exhausted too, and it was amazing he was able to keep us upright at all.
We have to go get him, I said. He can't just... He can't stay down there. He doesn't like the dark. He can't handle silence. He shouldn't have to be alone.
Ruby, Liam said gently, there's not going to be anything to get, and I think you know that. I recoiled violently, trying to push back against him, against the reality, but that burst of energy was as quick to pass as it had been to come. The tears were hot on my cheeks. They mixed with the dirt, rolling over my lips, dripping off my chin. His hands came up to either side of my face, wiping them away, even as I felt his own drip against my hair.
I can't, I said. I can't.
For the first time, I wondered if the reason he hadn't wanted me to go wasn't because he thought they wouldn't find Jude, but because he thought they would.
He was alone, I cried. He didn't have anyone with him. He must have been so scared. I told him we would stay together.
My mind was fixed on Jude's face, the way his ears stuck out from the sides of his head like they'd been mismatched with the rest of his body. What was the last thing I said to him? Stay close? Keep going? And what had he said back? All I could remember was his pale face in the faint light of Cole's yellow glow stick. Follow leader. He had followed me out, and I had led him to this. I had done this to him.
Lee?
Chubbs called, and again, louder, when neither of us moved. There was a plane flying low overhead, dropping a cloud of something that looked like red gas. Liam raised his arms, covering our heads as the wind blew it toward us and dropped thousands of fluttering sheets of paper. The kids and agents left the safe cover of the bridge to try to catch one. I snatched a stray sheet as it winged past us. Liam leaned over my shoulder, and I held it up for us to read it together. Centered at the top of the page were the presidential seal, an American flag, and the insignia for the Department of Defense. Following the assassination attempt by the disturbed Psy youth, President Gray was taken to an area hospital where doctors examined him. As he was wearing a Kevlar vest during the attack, he sustained only abdominal bruising and two fractured ribs. Once he was discharged from their care, he released the following statement. "Today we received confirmation on two disturbing intelligence reports I had prayed were only hearsay. First, that the Federal Coalition and its supporters are in the pocket of the terrorist organization, the Children's League, and, together, they have established a program that conditions your children, the same ones they have stolen away from the life-saving rehabilitation camps, to be soldiers, to fight and kill with a ferocity that is as inhuman as the abilities they possess. Seeing no other alternative, I immediately launched an airstrike against the seat of these organizations, Los Angeles. These were targeted attacks designed to minimize the damage to civilians. Do not mourn the loss of these reprehensible human beings. There have been times, in the course of human history, that fire has been needed to burn out an insidious infection. These are such times. This is the only way for us to build our nation again, stronger than before." "He forgot the God bless America part," Liam muttered, crumpling the paper. A gunshot fired behind us. I wheeled around, gripping Liam's arm to force him behind me. The agents had formed a circle around something, someone, on the other embankment. The men and women who were armed had their weapons out, aimed.
"Are you kidding me?"
Liam breathed out behind me. Vida practically screamed in rage, running toward the cluster of agents faster than any of us could catch her. Some of them knew to move out of the way as the blue girl tore through their circle, but only Cole was dumb enough to try to keep her from tearing out Clancy Gray's throat.
"How?"
she howled as we wedged ourselves through the kids and agents, pushing our way to the front.
"How?"
Clancy was filthy, covered in sewage and dust and blood that caked around his swollen nose and eyes. But even from where they'd pushed him onto his hands and knees, he managed to look smug, defiant. For the first time, I noticed the door open behind him. It was directly across from the exit we had taken, on the opposite embankment, hidden in the blind spot in one of the pillars, under a layer of bright graffiti. Clancy let out a low, humorless laugh. "Through the drain in the boys' showers." His dark eyes met mine.
"After I had to smash my way out of the closet."
"Was that how you were planning to get out?" I demanded. "After you got what you needed from Albin's office?" Clancy shrugged, unbothered by the guns pointed in his face.
"Didn't know about that exit, did you?"
"Jesus,"
one of the agents said.
This is really the president's kid?"
"Clancy is alive," I thought, turning into Liam's side, "and Jude is not." He tucked his arm around my neck, drawing me in closer. It didn't make sense. It wasn't possible.
"He's our ticket out," another said suddenly. "We trade him for safe passage. Come on, Stuart, uniforms are swarming the city, and we have no transport or way to contact the ranch. What other card do we have to play?"
"Well, it's not exactly going to be a cakewalk dropping him off with our new neighbors, either. He's an orange. He'll find a way out of it."
Cole glanced at Clancy, ignoring the shocked noises from the others.
"So maybe it's better to end him now and send the body back. That'd be quite the message to dear old Dad. We'll find another way out of the city."
There was a murmur of agreement from a few of the others.
"You're not getting out of this city," Clancy said. "My father's not reactionary. That's not his game. He'll have accounted for every possible exit strategy. Trust me, this has been in the works for months, maybe even years.
When he got tired of waiting for an excuse to justify the attack, he created one.
That was almost too ridiculous to believe.
You think your father arranged a hit on himself?
It's what I would have done. I'm assuming he survived.
Liam's hold on me tightened until it was almost unbearable. I was shaking again, only this time it was anger blazing through me. Vida and Chubbs both glanced over my way, like they were waiting for me to contradict him. I don't know what terrified me more, that he wasn't wrong, or that this was the old Clancy, the one who knew he could always get his way.
You guys believed me when I said we were starting over, didn't you?
Cole was addressing the kids and agents who were still sitting beneath the bridge, looking torn and petrified.
Well, this is it. We make our own road, but he's not coming with us.
Think of the intel we could get out of him, another agent cried, throwing her hands up in the air. We can sedate him.
Try it, Clancy dared. See how it ends for you.
Yeah, you're right, Cole said, rolling his eyes. We probably should just kill you.
Go ahead, then.
Clancy's teeth were stained with blood as he smiled.
Finish it. I finished what I came to do, and you all...
He turned toward the huddled masses of kids around him, his eyes focusing on Nico. The boy trembled under the intensity of his gaze.
You all can thank me when you can still fight back. I saved us. I saved us.
What the hell are you talking about? Cole was losing his patience. He glanced back at me, but I couldn't look away from Clancy Gray. Not when I felt the first trickle of realization working its way through the grief still clouding my mind. That morning, a whole city had been destroyed, and countless lives with it. There would be so many people who would never return home to their loved ones that night, though those mothers, fathers, daughters, sons, wives, husbands would pass through the afternoon and midnight hours, waiting, hoping. The smoke would seep into the concrete that lined every inch of this place, permanently bruising an already beaten city. In 10 years, 20 years, it would still be too terrible to speak of what happened. A morning that 1,000 other blinding, brilliant mornings would never erase from memory. But somehow, when Clancy spoke again, it was his words that changed everything.
The cure for IAAN, he spat. The one my mother developed. The one Alban kept hidden from you, waiting for the right opportunity to trade it to my father to benefit himself?
Clancy swiped at the blood draining from his nose, laughing in that same humorless way.
The one that would have taken our abilities away and left us helpless. I burned it to ash, and my father buried it without realizing. Now her memory of it is gone, and no one will ever have the research. No one will take away what's ours.
A cure. That single word was chiming like a bell in my ears, ringing again and again. My mind couldn't grasp it, couldn't recognize it. I'd spent so many years conditioning myself to accept that it was impossible, forcing myself to let go of thinking there was a world beyond the camp's electrified fence, that the word no longer existed in my vocabulary. I felt myself start to turn, looking to Jude for his reaction. But Jude wasn't here. I had left him behind. I had let him fall back into the darkness. And it was like seeing Liam and Chubbs climbing out of the tunnel alone all over again. It stole the breath from my chest. One of the younger kids began to cry loudly behind me, asking in a panicked, confused voice,
"What? What is he? What is he talking about?"
Oh, I thought. Oh my God. I had been wrong. So wrong. The First Lady hadn't been studying what caused the disease. She had invested her life in figuring out how to end it. I felt myself step toward him, away from the others.
Chubbs was visibly shaking, about to collapse under the weight of what could have been. I caught Liam's eye, but his expression was so open, so raw with pain and longing, that I had to turn away. I knew what he was imagining. In my mind, we were standing on that beach, too, with the crystal-clear skies overhead and our beautiful, whole families around us. A cure. Alban had been right when he said Lillian Gray had never been blinded by her love for her son. She knew Clancy would never willingly give up his abilities, and that she'd never find him. No, he needed to come to her, to be lured by the satisfaction of tracking her down after being shut out and denied access to her for so long. He had to be the first one to receive the treatment, because if he heard so much as a whisper of the possibility of it, he'd disappear forever. It made me wonder if that was the reason Alban had sat on the secret for as long as he did, if that was part of the deal. Clancy first. Then he could present it to the world. He could be the nation's hero. I studied Clancy's face as I crouched down to his level. His gaze flickered toward my hand as I slid it into my coat pocket. Behind all of his venomous words was the sting of true betrayal, an ache that ran so deep, his whole body seemed to throb with it. His mother, his own mother, had set up the trap. And he had done what in return? Burned down her lab, attacked her, scrambled her mind, and used the situation at HQ to his advantage to finish what he'd started in Georgia. That's how he knew she sent the results to Alban, I thought, slowly smoothing the papers out over my knee. I had his full attention now. He must have seen it in her mind. Clancy loved the idea his father had inadvertently buried the one thing that could potentially fix his country and salvage his legacy. But the true irony here was that if Clancy hadn't come looking to destroy his mother's research, we never would have found it in time. It would have been left behind, like everything else, as we escaped. He'd come here to close that door, but instead, he had left it wide open for me to walk through. There is a cure. The insanity of that thought made me feel like the hand on Jude's compass spinning and spinning and spinning, searching for its true north. He deserved this. I blinked back the prick of tears and let my anger rise to swallow the anguish for now. I let it propel me forward, because Jude deserved to live to see this moment. He should have been here, now, next to me, suddenly seeing that everything was alive with the possibility of change. I held up the rumpled, smoke-stained papers directly in front of Clancy, high enough for the ring of Psi and agents around us to see them too. And I don't know what was more powerful and gratifying to me, the look of terror that swept across his face, or the exhilaration of knowing I finally had my future back in my own hands. You mean this research? We hope you have enjoyed our presentation of Never Fade by Alexandra Bracken. Copyright 2013 by Alexandra Bracken. Performed by Amy McFadden. Directed by Max Bloomquist. Engineered by Zachary Eidenberger.